and happy Heritage Month. I wish you a happy Heritage Month, because I believe that heritage is about who we are. So let us celebrate this month in whatever way that we feel is comfortable for us. Learn more about your heritage and ensure that you pass on your knowledge to other people. It's important for us to know our heritage, because I believe that if you know where you come from, you are able to chart your way to where you want to go. And we have, as the Portfolio Committee from 2014, when we first came here, Deputy Chair, we took it upon ourselves as the Portfolio Committee on Arts and Culture to ensure that, because 80% of the budget of the Department of Arts and Culture is transferred to entities. So we said, in this area of entities, that's where we are going to find us as the Portfolio Committee, because it really stands to reason that if 80% of the budget goes to entities, that's where we need to focus, and that's where we need to prioritize as the Portfolio Committee. And this is what we did. And there is a lot that is happening within the entities, and instances where, as the Portfolio Committee, we really feel that there is a lot that is not going well, and you would like the department to deal with these matters. So we invited you to come and brief us on that topic of appointment of senior officials in public entities, because there's a lot is happening, that is happening, and a lot of stuff that we are concerned with as the Portfolio Committee. We know we've learned a lot of things in this four years, but we are nearing the end now. We've learned a lot of things. We've learned that as the Portfolio Committee, that it's not about your feelings. It's not about your gut feeling, what you feel. It's not about not liking somebody. It's not about loving someone. But it's about the Constitution and the laws. It's not about all of those things, but it's about the law and the Constitution. What does it say? So this is what we've learned. We may love you, we may like you, but there is something within the law that prescribes how to do things. We've learned that. And in some instances, you feel that, hey, we so... I don't want to say hope, because as the Portfolio Committee, we say hope is not a strategy. You can't hope that things will happen. If they don't happen, what do you do? But this session is going to assist us to ensure that we understand exactly how to do things. There are things, really, as the Portfolio Committee, that we feel we need assistance in. Without wasting time, because the department will be here at 10, let me allow you to introduce yourselves, and we will introduce ourselves. Let's start by introducing ourselves, and you'll introduce yourselves. But you are most welcome. We know that after this session, we will be better people. We'll have a deeper understanding of some of the issues. I am Oluswa Tom. I am the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Arts and Culture.
My name is Thomas Makondo, member of the Portfolio Committee.
I'm Alan Khrupo, member of the committee.
Mokhosi Pulane, member of the committee.
My name is Kansani Bilangule, a member of the Portfolio Committee. Thanks.
We can start with the deputy chair here.
My name is Ben Mtembo, Deputy Chairperson of the Public Service Commission. I'm accompanied by the Director for Monitoring and Evaluation, Ms. Carmen Domingo Suart. I'm told she's just about to get in here. I'm sure she's not familiar with the environment, but I hope she will be in very soon. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Chairperson. My name is Nozipiwo Gwaza. I'm the Parliamentary Officer for the Public Service Commission.
I am Unamia Zamkhele, a legal intern from OISD.
My name is Joseph Sitole. I'm communication intern at OISD.
Hi, my name is Musumzi from PMG.
Morning, I'm Alex, I'm from PMG as well. I was supposed to make a little gift and so I know who is here.
I'm all waiting for the morning, thank you very much. This is my name, thank you very much.
Good morning, I'm Theo, the second I believe that.
Thank you very much. We are ready for the presentation. We are ready for the presentation. You can start the presentation.
Once more again, thank you, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Arts and Culture. We want to also to appreciate and our greetings to the honorable members of the Portfolio Committee on Arts and Culture. And at this point in time, I wish to express our appreciation for having received the invitation to come and interact with you. I want also to be upfront to say that much as the Public Service Commission's mandate is limited to public service, which is defined narrowly as a national department and provincial department. It does not extend to public entities. We appreciate the fact that constitutionally, the principles which underpin, you know, administration in the Republic, as defined in the Constitution, covers public entities, local government, and everybody. And we know also that now the people don't look in terms of which structures you are. They just look like if government, public enterprise, local government, whatever. They're not concerned with our conceptual definition and technicalities. They are concerned to the extent to which this country is governed in terms of the constitutional values and principles which define what is a good governance. So we appreciate that. We haven't done much work in terms of the public entities. However, we realize that as a Public Service Commission, we are accountable to Parliament. And as a Public Service Commission, we have got a mandate to ensure that through our work, investigation, research, we come up with information which will empower departments so that they are in a position to exercise their constitutional mandate, that of oversight over the executive in particular, so that we ensure that now the executive are actually implementing the policies of a legitimate government. So in that context, we felt that now we have to do something, and then we ask our researchers to quickly just conduct what we call, you know, a rapid, you know, desktop research, you know, within 2 days and so on, so that at least we can begin, you know, to do something. And therefore, we wanted just to caution that now, what we're going to present here is just a rapid, you know, desktop, you know, analysis in terms of these entities where we're not officially in them. I can point out to you that there's been a struggle from the Public Service Commission since 2012 to ensure that the public service mandate actually should extend to local government as well as entities. That was a decision taken by the Portfolio Committee on Public Service and Administration as early as 2011. We've been trying, there is an amendment bill which was handed down, so it is a struggle to reach there. So now, what we're going to present here actually is what we have managed to gather. We're not sure whether we'll meet your expectation, but I appreciate your opening words, Chairperson. They're very, very profound. The fact that 80% of the budget goes to entities, it says a lot. The money that we spend there, to what extent is that money being used effectively and efficiently, which is a key, one of the key principles and values of the Constitution. And this is a constitutional democracy. One of the key principles in a constitutional democracy is a rule of law. So it's not a question of whom you like or whom you hate or whatever. And that is what is retarding progress. Because we tend to put emotions. Whereas the Constitution is very clear. It is the rule of law. It is a constitutional democracy. We are governed by the constitutional law. Our life, and if we keep in that, we put content, we'll be able to make progress and create that society which our preamble so beautifully expresses, a society which is very prosperous, human dignity, social justice, etc., etc. Now, with those few words, Chairperson, I just wanted to extend our appreciation. I hope that this will be the beginning of an interaction, and if you can inform us anytime, much earlier, so that we've got time, we can go deep into this, so that we are serious to assist departments to do their oversight over the executive very effectively. So, with those ways, I will then request Ms. Carmen Domingo-Swart, whom we have agreed should make a presentation, and thereafter we can engage in terms of question and answer or comments.
Thank you very much. And we're told that you were getting lost in this institution, but we're glad that you were found, lost and found. You are most welcome. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. Yeah, I apologize for being late. It was a bit of a maze. I felt like Alice in Wonderland. I'm not going to repeat what Deputy Chairperson has indicated. You obviously looked at the amount of slides that we've prepared. It's not very detailed in depth analysis of information and exactly the reasoning that the Deputy Chairperson has indicated. Just in terms of our presentation, what we've managed to put together is just like a little bit of an introduction. The public entity appointments, research in terms of how it actually works in terms of the appointments, inconsistencies in terms of the appointments in public entities, institutionalized recruitment processes specifically in the Department of Public Enterprises. And then we also looked at the Presidential Review Committee recommendations on the appointment in state-owned entities. They've done extensive research in 2013, and we've just basically looked at what their findings were and some of their recommendations that we thought is important to come share with the committee. What we also did is we looked at a little bit of the legislation that enables the establishment of these different public entities, and highlighted just the issues in terms of the roles and responsibilities of the senior officials within these entities, and then ending off with some closing remarks that the PSA would like to leave you with. Okay. In terms of the introduction, that's basically just the request that we've received from the committee in terms of the appointment of senior officials, and zooming into the appointment of the Chief Executive Officer and the Chief Financial Officer. and also looking at how are the contracts being extended. So what is the process that the different boards and the different councils basically follow in terms of making that decision for reappointment? Our mandate is clearly defined in Section 196 of the Constitution, which states that we are responsible for oversight in terms of public service and administration, specifically in national and provincial government. And I think my DC has already indicated that, you know, unfortunately we don't have extensive research, but this is what we've managed to put together. This whole presentation is based on information that we gathered from research that was done by the Presidential Review Committee on State-Owned Entities in 2013, as well as the Department of Public Service and Administration. They developed a handbook on the appointment of persons to the boards of state and state-control institutions, which was approved by Cabinet in 2007 and published in 2008. I don't know if it's... Let's try that. So none of the research that we are presenting is our research. In terms of public entities, we started looking at what the legislation says, is that all public entities are required to have an enabling legislation. It's basically just the foundation for reason for existence in terms of making sure that people understand the different duties and executive responsibilities of these entities. It defines their corporate governance structure as well as their public purpose mandates. The big gap in terms of these enabling legislations for these different public entities is there's no overarching regulations that governs the appointment or even the establishment of these different public entities. So therefore, the DPSA developed the handbook on the appointment of persons to the board, and they specifically focus on the appointment of the members to the board. And the whole idea was to provide guidelines. Well, so these are guidelines. It's not like it's compliance requirements that people should do. It's a question of you may. That's the type of language that is used, you know. You may, or it is advised, or is it recommended, or it's suggested that you do A, B, and C. But there's no place where it shall, as in the legislation, it shall and should. That's why I'm saying that is the challenge with this. But it also is based on a lot of best practice in the different public entities. And the main purpose was to create some uniformity, but I think the gap was also in terms of promoting this handbook a little bit better and getting more buy-in from the public entities so that it is a process that is assisting rather than seeing as an additional thing that they need to do. The handbook represents a standalone practical document, which is not in a way, as I've already said, prescriptive, or a formal framework that they need to use. But in terms of the departments responsible for governing or oversight of these departments, this handbook focuses on those policies and compliance procedures for those departments to basically comply with. In our process of trying to get information for the committee, we contacted the Department of Public Service and Administration, and they've indicated that they are currently have a revised national guide for the appointment of persons to the board of state and state control institutions, which is being processed for approval by Cabinet. And this guide has gone a step further. It is looking into the appointments of CEOs and CFOs and also procurement officers. So making sure that there's a clear understanding of what the recruitment and selection processes are, what are some of the key skills and capacity required for these officials within these positions. So hopefully, it's quite soon, during this time, it will be presented to the portfolio committee. And I'm sure they will be more than willing to come to the to this committee to present this guideline that they have developed. In terms of the research that was done by the Presidential Review Committee, we just looked at some of the inconsistencies in terms of the appointment. For the members, I'm not going to, you must just tell me if you want me to go through each and every sentence, but I can give you the overall snapshot of what is in there as well. I'm sure everybody has read the presentation. But I think overall the big inconsistencies is that it's so reliant, the recruitment and selection process is so reliant on the personal preference of the minister. So the minister decides how they want to run with this process. And sometimes, as the research has indicated, it also depends on the size of the entity. If it's a much smaller entity, then the minister will take the responsibility for the appointments of the board members and delegate the rest of the appointments to the board. So as I've indicated, it really varies from one public entity to another. There's no common areas. And in terms of the process. So the minister can choose to delegate that authority to the chairperson, who then is able to delegate it even further. They delegate the management of that process to the Human Resource and Nominations Committee. And depending on the size of the entity, of the state-owned entity, that is either run internally or it's in some cases even outsourced to a recruitment agency. What we did find generally, the process is there is a short list of 3 to 5 candidates that is prepared and forwarded to the Human Resource and Nomination Committee of the Board. The committee then selects their preferred candidates, and those names are basically then forwarded to the minister to make a decision. One thing that is what the research also say is that this is a very consultative process, also depending on the relationship between the minister and the chairperson of that board. So if there is a good working relationship, there is that continuous consultative process of informing the minister of the progress in terms of the recruitment and selection process and even the nomination. So there's informal discussions in terms of how this person is standing out and the reasoning in terms of skills and capacity that this person has that can benefit the board. Most, if not all, of the state-owned entities, founding acts deal with the issue of the appointment of the CEOs, and the research highlights that even the PFMA is very silent in terms of giving direct instructions in terms of how this process should actually be managed. So on a legal foot, there's a lot of loopholes. There's a lot of loopholes, which allows a lot of interpretation. So if I feel this way, I can interpret the statement in the way that I feel, not necessarily in the way that it needs to be implemented. The Department of Public Enterprises, based on the very, very rapid research that we did, seems to be the only department that has some framework put on paper in terms of how they do the recruitment and selection process. But again, the emphasis is mainly on board members. So it's what they call institutionalized recruitment process, where they have a 5-step process that they basically have to follow. So it ranges from reviewing the skills and the identification of people that actually match those skills, the identification of suitable candidates against those skills. Candidates are then screened in terms of looking at the companies and intellectual property databases, so just trying to understand the linkages that this person has in terms of do they serve on other boards and how many boards they serve on and what is their interest in terms of those other boards and is there any conflict on that level in terms of board members only. And after that process, they do a final selection with final vetting process in terms of trying to match the skills of this nominated person to the skills of the other board members, so how they will complement each other, basically. Number five is just the interviews that are being conducted with the different candidates or a candidate, and then once a decision has been made, it is submitted for approval to the minister. The one thing that I wanted to highlight in terms of this process is on number eight, where it says that board member may be appointed for a second term to ensure sustainability. But the act, but this framework also emphasizes that it should be linked to the performance of that individual as well. So it's not just a blank statement that everybody can be reappointed. It must be linked to performance assessments and trying to understand, can this person actually deliver on this position that they are filling, and what is the continuous skills development process put in place for this individual. Then the research done by the Presidential Review Committee, they have specific ideas in terms of how this needs to work. They've indicated that the appointment of the CEO should be done by the minister, and again in consultation with the others and at the recommendation of the board. So the board will still nominate 3 to 5 individuals or candidates that needs to go through the process as highlighted in the table from the Department of Public Enterprises. So the following is recommended in terms of the process. The board is responsible for the process of recruitment and assessment of the nominated candidates. Board recommends to the executive authority 2 or 3 appointable, and that's the exact words that they used in the research, candidates for approval, and executive authority confirms the appointment in writing. To manage sustainable development and retention of skills, they go further and recommend that instead of the 3-year contract that is signed with CEOs, that contract should be extended. I think it's a similar recommendation that the PSC made in terms of the appointment of the Director General that were previously a 3-year contract, which has been extended to 5 years. The board should adopt a structure and intense performance management system for state-owned enterprises executive management. And this is very important in terms of when they need to make a decision for extension of a contract or reappointment of any member. When we scan through some of these legislation, it seems like each member can at least have 2 terms. After that, they need to have a resting period of at least 3 to 4 years, depending on that specific council, before they can actually be nominated for a third term. But it's been seen as a first term in a different cycle. Okay. What we did is we just zoomed in a little bit on trying to highlight some of the wording that is captured in the legislation. We looked at the National Arts Council legislation, as well as the National Film and Video Foundations Act. So we looked at those acts just trying to get a sense of what they are saying in terms of the appointment of the CEO. And we'll see there that in the Act for the National Arts Council, it says that the council shall appoint a full-time CEO for the council. The CEO shall be appointed for such a period subject to such conditions, including conditions related to the payment of remuneration and allowances, as the council may determine, and may be reappointed on the expiry of his or her period of office. Both these acts that we looked at is silent on the appointment of CFOs. So there's no indication of what the process should be in terms of reporting, of appointment of the CFOs. And the National Film and Video Association Act basically echoes verbatim the same words as the National Arts Council. Okay. In terms of the roles and responsibilities, in terms of the legislation, it just says that the CEO shall be responsible for the management of the affairs of the council. In terms of reporting on the affairs on the council, so all the strategic objectives, what the processes are in place, how they are performing against their plans that they have developed, and as many times as the council requires. So they don't have, they've got a fixed governance process in terms on a quarterly basis how they report, but that doesn't mean that the council can't call them in for them to come and report on the performance or the activities of the council. Additional to these functions of the CEO, he or she shall be the accounting officer, also charged the responsibility of accounting for all the money that has been received by the council, as well as how this money is being utilized. So that expenditure review is something that they need to also report on a continuous basis. They are also responsible for the property reporting of the relevant council. Just in terms of the prescripts for acting appointment of the CEO, we looked a little bit deeper into the Act of the National Film and Video Foundation, where it indicates that when a CEO is absent for any reason or unable to carry out his or her duties, or whenever there is a vacancy in the office of the CEO, the council may subject to such conditions and payment of such remuneration and allowance as it may determine, appoint an employee of the council. So it should be somebody already in the council to act as the CEO during such absence or inability or until the CEO has been appointed. So it's very specific in terms of how does the acting work in terms of appointment of a CEO, and again very silent in terms of the Chief Financial Officer. We would like to leave the committee with three closing remarks, just to say that the inadequacies in the current legislative framework to regulate the functioning of the state-owned entities should be addressed for better accountability, which is critical for delivery and the broader transformation of the state. So trying to realign all these different legislations so that they actually speak to each other instead of contradicting each other is important if we are serious about accountability within these entities and a process to facilitate effective and sufficient delivery of services. For the PSC, a gap in terms of the recruitment process here is the continuous scrutiny of private interest. So it's not just a vetting process, because we must remember when we do interviews, our vetting processes tend to focus on the references of a board member and the initial review of the database in terms of properties and intellectual property associated with this member. But it should be something that is done on a continuous basis. And similar to senior management in government, national and provincial level, that annual financial disclosure needs to be something that should be introduced within these entities. Oversight departments should take their responsibilities much seriously as what we are seeing now to ensure that effective and sufficient management of these state-owned entities, as most of these entities are self-managing. And I think we are getting the fruits of this self-management because it is so outside of our governance structures and our compliance requirements as as a public sector. And then finally, we appreciate this opportunity to provide the committee with input, and we hope that this could add value in your decision-making process. Thank you.
Thank you very much. As I said earlier, that we were sure from the onset that at the end of this presentation we'll be cleverer. Yes. Welcome, Minister. Welcome, and I appreciate the fact that you are here with us this morning. Honorable members, that's the presentation. Are there any questions or comments? It's an opportunity, I'm giving an opportunity to members to ask questions and to make comments. But I think my one is on the delegation. Are these delegations written? Do we have written delegations when the minister is delegating a particular, is giving delegation to a particular entity, to a board, to say, I'm giving you a delegation to appoint? Is it written, or is it something that's discussed between the board and the minister? Are there any written delegations? I think for us as the committee, it's important to have it written for the record. I think it's important for us, because I was trying to think, have we ever, since 2014, asked for any written delegations as the committee? But as you were presenting, I was beginning to think that it's important for us as the committee to have these delegations even before we even start doing our work, so that we are clear what is delegated to who from the onset. I think it's one thing that I felt is important for us as the committee to follow up on. Honorable Mohut.
No, Chairperson, thank you. The presentation was an eye-opener, but though it didn't touch on our space, because it's more on, it seems, lies on the public service, you know, maybe your levels 1 to level 12, because ours is on entities. Chair, this loophole that the legislature is doing, that's why our entities now, they do as much as they wish, the appointments of this board, because it seems there's no prescript that is guiding them. That's why today we find that the CEO or the CFO, they just do as they wish, you know, because if you go through this laws, it can take you back. I can use the TIC or the GPF. If you go to the salary band of the GPF, is not aligned with the public service one. And at the end of the day, it's where the coffers of the workers are lies. It comes back to us. We do the budget. We give the budget to these entities. But at the end of the day, there's nothing, Chair, that gives these entities that we can hold them accountable to say the Public Service Commission is saying this. So my question, I wanted to know, if I want to report one CEO of the entity in terms of maybe the recruitment processes or the disciplinary hearing that maybe didn't go well, maybe as a worker, where will I go? Because I don't find it in the Public Service Commission. Thanks, Chair. But it has opened us to this. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. Honorable Bullet.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, everyone. Chair, I think Honorable Mokosi has said much. I also want to add that maybe perhaps as the legislatures, we need to look on reviewing the whole process, the law, because looking at the presentation, it's a very good and straightforward presentation, by the way, Chair. Let me welcome it. We really need to sit down, apply our minds, and look at how best can we review these legislations as legislators, all of us, Chair, on appointment of boards, and perhaps be clear, because in my understanding, as I was going through As I was going through the presentation, Chair, I felt that as much as it's not mentioned in words that the public servants, entities should be included, entities are public also. It's not mentioned, yes, in ways that they should be included or they should be part of the public service commission, but the bottom line is they are public entities. Whatever applies on the public, that's my assumption, whatever applies on public institutions, it should also apply across the board. They are not exclusive. We really need to correct that. We shouldn't make them to be exclusive because they are part of the public entities or public or departments or whatever that you can say. I think we really need to look hard on that. Thank you.
In fact, this is what you've been saying as the portfolio committee, that entities are arms of the department. The money that they get is from the taxpayers. It's the money that we pass as the portfolio committee. They are doing work for the department for the department to achieve its vision. So I think what the honorable members are raising is something that maybe we need to, as a portfolio committee, take forward with the relevant portfolio committee within Parliament. As you were saying earlier, that there is work that is being done. I think we need, as this portfolio committee, to follow it up. Because as I said earlier, that 80% of the budget of the Department of Arts and Culture is transferred to entities. And there is no way that we can let entities do as they please. We can't. We would have failed as the portfolio committee and as the department as well. So I think it's about what you raised earlier, that we need to follow up on the work that has been started to see how far it has gone, to see how we can input as this portfolio committee so that the work can go on and get to a conclusion, because we think it's important for that to happen. Do you want to respond briefly to the issues? Honorable Bilangul?
Thanks, Chairperson. I just want to check the issue of delegation, because on slide number 7, they've indicated that most of the ministers delegate to the chairpersons, and the chairperson delegates again. So I just want to check this delegation. Who is to account at the end of the day if the minister is delegated and the person has been delegated by the minister also delegate to somebody else? So at the end, when we want to get clarity on accountability on that particular thing, we is to account then. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, can we get responses?
Okay. Thank you very much, Chairperson, honorable members. In terms of the delegation, this delegation information comes from the research that was done by the Presidential Review Committee. And as far as we read in the research report that was published, there seems to be no written delegation. It's verbal delegations in terms of minister to the chairperson and chairperson to the Human Resources and Nomination Committee. The Human Resource and Nomination Committee has set terms and reference in terms of what their responsibility is in terms of the recruitment and selection process. But unfortunately, we could not obtain any documentation that shows that there is delegations in place. Like, for example, within the new 2016 public service regulations, there's clear articulation in terms of the different levels of senior officials in government in terms of how delegations work. So the foundation is there, but unfortunately written delegations in terms of this, we've not seen it, and it's also not recorded within the research that was done by the Presidential Review Committee. In terms of the delegation, who ultimately then takes, who is held accountable, I think the responsibility remains with the minister, whether the, it has been delegated, but ultimately the buck stops with the minister, and that's our interpretation of the legislation and the research that has been done. We unfortunately can't speak for the Presidential Review Committee, but our interpretation of what we've gone through and what we've read, this is the way that we would answer you, Honourable Member. In terms of the appointments that we've highlighted, Madam, it comes from the actual Act. So it's not the appointments of officials within the public service. Levels 2 to 12. It's specifically the appointments through the Act, which is the enabling legislation of that specific council. As far as the research that we've undertaken, there is no recruitment and selection policy. There is no recruitment and selection guideline for the appointment of other senior officials as part of the committee, which is obviously a huge gap. And that is what DPSA is trying to fill with the latest national guidelines in terms of looking still at the board, but zooming in specifically in terms of the CEO, CFO, as well as the procurement officer. So yes, it is definitely a big gap. So if the legislation, the enabling legislation doesn't speak to it, yes, we have a responsibility as national government to ensure that there's some sort of a oversight governing framework or governing structure that takes that zooms more into to these issues and make sure that it's aligned with the public service regulations that we currently have in place. Okay. In terms of the reporting of the CEO or CFO in a council, and I think, Chairperson, it relates to what you've indicated in terms of ultimately the national department is responsible for that entity because that entity is the feet of that department. And the National Anti-Corruption Hotline of the Public Service Commission is a place where CEOs can, people can report those CEOs of those entities. Generally, these cases are reported either to the Public Service Commission as well as the Public Protector. And between these two entities, there is discussion and consultation to make sure that there's not duplication in cases, as well as the Presidential Hotline of Corruption, if there is a question in terms of that. Should I continue or?
Okay. No, Chair, the presenter is saying that maybe member of the public, if he's calling them, it's them, the Public Protector, and the Presidential Hotline. Did you ever had a case where a member of the public calling the Public Service Commission, maybe complaining about the GPF? And how are you handling that? You know, I just want, because, Chair, really we're in a crisis as a country. Why I'm saying this, you will find that the CEO of, like, NAC tomorrow will be employed at Tensal. And at that site, there was a problem. You know, and it was raised, and maybe nobody did take that thing serious. But I wanted to know, the Public Service Commission, did you ever had a case that a member or any person maybe need an assistant in terms of somebody who's in an entity, and how did you handle that? Or did you transfer it to another or public?
I would rather want to come back to the committee to make sure that we double-check with our organization. As far as I know, as stated earlier by our deputy chairperson, that it is seen in the eyes of the organization as something that falls outside of our mandate. Mm-hmm. But I would really like to make 100% sure that there was no such case where the matter was rather raised with the executive authority of the national department. So I think that is generally that the process that we will follow. So there would be some investigation. Even if it is reported to the Public Service Commission, the Public Service Commission will then report it to the National Department of Arts and Culture, for example, and see what capacity the department has to investigate such allegations. So it's also not a question of if it's reported to us, we will just leave it like that. It doesn't happen like that. So there will be engagement with the relevant executive authority.
Are you done?
In terms of what applies to the public service should apply to the entities, I think the big difference, as I started to say in the presentation, is the fact that all public entities have their own enabling legislation. And that is the challenge, because it's used as a loophole to say we have our own, therefore you can't enforce yours on us. And it is definitely the time to re-look at that approach, obviously making sure of how these two speak to each other. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, just in addition of what has been said, firstly, with regard to delegations, whether who takes responsibility, where now the miss has delegated to Chairperson down the line. Now, strictly speaking, when one delegates, it's not a devolution of power. In other words, the one who's having the basic power, the minister, you know, retains the power and responsibility. So if you have delegated, we have not transferred your power. It's simply just for efficiency and effectiveness, so that now you don't have someone to wait for one person, but then you delegate it for that one. But the person who takes final accountability is the minister. Cannot say I've delegated, etc., etc. So I just wanted to make that. And then secondly, we're not quite sure, as I've indicated earlier on, and we don't want, you know, to say things which are factually inaccurate. You know, we're very careful about that, whether these delegations are written or not written. But we do know that in the Public Service Act is very, very strict on that one, that delegation must be in writing. There can be no saying whatever, you know, something that is informal arrangement. No. It's very, very clear. And especially with the public safety regulations of 2016, it's even very straight, very obligatory. And in fact, we, as a public service corps, we even make a follow-up, you know, to see that now delegations have been done. Because in the past, you talk about delegations, but then now you find that all the powers, you know, are centered in one person. But now there is that kind of a delegation. So we're not sure about that. What is emerging here is that from the invitation we've received, we talk about public entity, and in our understanding we talk of the, you know, broadly speaking, the SOEs. I think the focus of our presentation was mostly there. We've just zoomed in, you know, very slightly. Now, when it comes to attention, that, by the way, it will seem that now, us in Carter, the number of entities, I'm sure more than 20, 20 is 25, you know, and quite frankly, we haven't been engaged in all of this. Now, the biggest challenge is this right now, as I've indicated earlier on, when you talk of public service, it is defined as what? As the national departments and provincial departments. Even local government municipalities, they don't fall under the Public Service Act. They've got their own acts, like what they call them, Structures Act, etc., even the appointments, etc. There was an attempt, you know, to have what we call a single public service. Unfortunately, somehow the process is still going on. I've also indicated that now, in 2011, for example, the Public Service Portfolio Committee, you know, make a resolution which was taken, which was actually, it was in fact a resolution of the National Assembly. that now the Public Service Commission's mandate should be extended to local government, should also be extended to public entities, you know, so that now, as I've indicated, that people see just one government. And if you look at Section 195, the principles and values that govern public administration, it involves what? Public entities, involves local government. It does not talk about just only national and provincial government. So there is that thing. And then we started a process of amending the Public Service Act so that now it can cover, you know, the various spheres. Unfortunately, that process is still on course, or still moving on. So that is the challenge which I've seen in. But as I've pointed out, if we can be given more time, we can look, you know, into these entities. Well, there are too many. Even if you can talk in the whole country, in public safety, I'm sure they will come to close to 400, if I'm not mistaken. It's a rough estimation. And you could imagine, you know, a commission like the Public Service Commission knowing everything, unless you get the request in time, and then you can look specifically and come with the factual and evidence-based, you know, which is very, which I call a systemic evidence, so that now what we're saying is actually a factual correct. So those are the additions I wanted to add, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Deputy Chair. For this session, as the Honourable Member said, is one session that is really important for us as the Portfolio Committee. How I wish we had called you earlier when we started in 2014, so that going forward we'll be in a position to even work with the other portfolio committee, so that some of the issues that we are raising today would have been resolved. Even the amendment of the act would have, if there are more than one portfolio committee pushing for that amendment, I mean, a lot would have happened. But we thank you very much. And some of the challenges that we are having, are becoming clearer. And as the portfolio committee, we will definitely keep in touch with you if there's anything that we need, more information that we need, any assistance that we need, we will come to you. We thank you very much for responding positively to our request for you to be here. Thank you. Yes. Honourable members, we can just grab a cup of tea while we allow the officials from the department and from the National Arts Council to come in. Welcome, Minister. Yes, it was good.
I already have my cup.
You have your phone. Okay. Issue, yeah, man. Is it hot enough?
But Madiba defied you.
No, Madiba came with the tradition.
You think that was Madiba?
No, when you think that there was a
Honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, let me once again welcome you to this meeting. We always say as the Portfolio Committee, each and every meeting is important to us because it's about us as the Portfolio Committee discharging our mandate of overseeing the work of the department and entities. We always say that from the onset in 2014 when we arrived here and were deployed to this portfolio committee from different parties, we took as a decision as the portfolio committee that because 80% of the budget of the department is transferred to entities, this is where our focus was going to be during the 5-year term that we would be here in Parliament. We took the decision very consciously, and this is what we have done in the past 4 years to ensure that we monitor, evaluate, and oversee the work that is done by entities. Minister, we welcome your presence in this meeting. And as the Portfolio Committee, as we always say, I remember in a meeting that took place on the 5th of the 9 months, in 2017, we registered our appreciation to you, Minister, and the Deputy Minister was present as well. Because as the Portfolio Committee, we believe strongly that your presence in these meetings can really assist us a great deal in resolving matters that sometimes take a long, long time to be resolved. So we really appreciate your presence in this meeting. In a number of meetings, we do outline the functions and the mandate of the Portfolio Committee. We do this because we have realized that in some of the entities, the work of the portfolio committees is perceived as interference. And we've always wanted to make it clear that ours is a constitution. constitutional mandate, and we do it without fear or favor. And as the portfolio committee, there are some things that we have learned that I enumerated earlier in the 4 years that we have been working here. We've learned a lot of things. We've seen a lot of things. We've experienced a lot of things as the portfolio committee. But we have learned, as honorable members, that there are always three sides to a story. When I grew up, there were two sides of a story, your side and my side. But during these 4 years, we've learned that there are three sides to any story. There's your side, my side, and something in between. This is what we have learned as the portfolio committee. That there's your truth, there's my truth, there is something that's in between those two. And as the portfolio committee, we have strived to look for this thing that is in between. And we have, as the portfolio committee, learned that it's not about who you love and who you hate in the work that we are doing. It's about what the Constitution says, and it's about what the law says. It's not about, you like me, so you can't do anything to me. You hate me, you do everything. It's about what the Constitution, what the law says. This we have learned during the 4 years that we have been working here. And we have learned that things are not always what they seem as this portfolio committee. We've learned that things are not always what they seem to be as the portfolio committee. But just to remind us that as the portfolio committee, this is clearly specified in Section 56 of the Constitution. Our job as the Portfolio Committee, our constitutional mandate, is to summon any person to appear before the Portfolio Committee to give evidence on oath or affirmation and produce documents. We require any person to report to the portfolio committee. We don't ask, we compel people to come and give and report to the portfolio committee. We also receive petitions, representations and submissions from any interested person or institution. When we do this, we are not interfering with your work. You do your work, we do our work. That the Constitution is mandating us to do. And also our functions of oversight are to detect and prevent abuse, arbitrary behavior, or illegal and unconstitutional conduct on the part of the government and public agencies. And the core of this function is the protection of the rights and liberties of citizens. To hold the government accountable in respect of how taxpayers' money is used, it detects waste, within the machinery of government and public agencies. Those are the functions of our oversight function. We ensure that policies announced by government and authorized by parliament are actually delivered. This function includes monitoring the achievement of goals set by legislation and the government's own programs. And last but not least, to improve transparency of government operations and enhance public trust in the government and enhance public trust in the government. Underline that. To enhance public trust in government. Minister, the reason why I'm doing this is that the National Arts Council, when we went for the first time for an oversight, they did not want to meet us. They did not want to meet the portfolio committee, telling us that, no, they've just come, they can't meet with us. They'll give us some other time to meet. This is why I'm doing this, reading the functions of the portfolio committee, the constitutional mandate of the portfolio committee. This is why I'm doing this. They were actually refusing to meet us, but we forced, because as I said earlier, we don't ask to be seen here. We don't ask. It's our constitutional mandate to do this function, but ultimately we did meet with them. And because as we always say, it's about understanding each other. Because Galoku, even the budget that we pass here, we do that on the basis of understanding what the department is going to do and making the house understand. Because you make us understand, we make other people understand, and the budget is passed. Because if we don't understand, how can we make the members in the house understand? So that the budget is passed. So it's as simple as that. We made this clear to the members of the council. So this is why I'm raising all this, to ensure that they understand that when we are doing our job, we are not interfering. This is why I'm doing it. I would like to welcome you all and say, Happy Heritage Month. This is our month. This is Heritage Month. And this is the month where the department is ensuring that we go back to our roots. We actually understand who we are. And it's so important for us to understand who we are so that we are grounded. Culture grounds you so that you understand who you are. You stand for something. Because if you don't stand for anything, you will fall for everything. So may we all enjoy this month and ensure that what we know about our culture and heritage, we share it with other people, especially young people. They need to get this information so that we can be able to move forward as a nation. We have in front of us an agenda. And I've done the welcome, but I was going to suggest, honorable members, that we make item number 5, which is dealing with NAC, the first item, the second item after welcome and apologies, and we deal with other matters after we have concluded the matter with NAC. That is my proposal, honorable members. It's seconded and said it. Thank you very much. Are there any apologies?
Good morning, members. Good morning, Mr. NAC, DAC. I've got four apologies from the NAC. The chairperson of the NAC is unable to attend today due to him being held up in a trial in Tshwane. Also have an apology for Ms. Van der Spee. She also has work commitments with Art and Shaw, so she's unable to attend this meeting. I also have an apology from Mr. Nkhlongo. He's traveling, he's out of the country. I also have another apology from Malaysian Naidu, who also has work commitments. And I also had an apology that I didn't print here from Ms. January McLean, who is undergoing surgery tomorrow. And the mom says indicating that the DM also has an apology for today. Also surgery. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, those are the apologies. Honourable members, those are the apologies. Are we accepting the apologies? Honourable Khulpun, proposal for the acceptance of the apologies?
That's fine.
Honourable Makondo, second step. Thank you very much. The reason why we have NAC in our agenda, Honourable Minister, is that in our last meeting, we were getting reports on matters arising, because what we have decided as the Portfolio Committee is that whenever there's a matter that is raised in our meeting, it becomes a standing matter until it is resolved, because we are avoiding the issue of things falling through the cracks. You have an issue, it falls through the cracks, and it gets lost. So in our matters arising, or issues that had to be followed up, was the issue of the National Arts Council. And we received a report, and we were stunned. We were really shocked. And this is why we said we would like to see the board, the council of the National Arts Council, because the issue of the investigation, the whole story, Minister, of the National Arts Council. When we were there for oversight, there are a number of issues that came out of that meeting. We made findings and recommendations from that meeting. And there were a number of issues that came out before that, after our meeting there, a number of issues. And these were raised in our meetings with the department, because issues are being raised. And as I said earlier here, there are a number of petitions that we received from people. And the issue of whistleblowing is something that we are inundated with as the Portfolio Committee. As I'm sitting here, there are a number of calls that I received 10:30 in the evening yesterday, and I'm still going to share them with you, NDG Minister, for you to follow up on them. And with NAC,
there are those issues as well of people who told us things that were happening there. If you remember, the issue of the board minister that came in before this one, where it was challenged in court. There's a board that was challenged in court. The board before this one, so challenged in court, and that board had to be disbanded. And as the portfolio committee, we asked the department, how much was spent on this? Because we have to look at the expenditure of the department, how taxpayers' money is spent. You looked at this matter, how much, the question was simple, how much was spent on advertising and interviewing that board that was disbanded later. And we got a response from the department that 300 and something thousand was spent on that, because we just wanted to understand how much was spent, the fruitless expenditure, and what was going to be done to the person who was responsible for that. 300 and whatever rands, 1,000 rands, okay. But thereafter, we found out that it was more than 1 million rand that was spent on the process of having that board in place. And we were like, 300,000, 1 million plus, what is this exactly? And we understood, and when we went back to the department to say, you have misinformed us, the department said, no, we thought that what you were asking was the money that was spent by the department. And remember, earlier we had said that the entities are the arms or legs or feet or whatever of the department. So if we are acting as the portfolio committee, when you tell us that this amount has been spent, I mean, you are not telling us the truth. So we asked the department to deal with that matter. And later we received a report that the department had dealt with the matter, and the official who was responsible to that wasteful expenditure of 1 million plus had received a warning, didn't you? Had received a warning. And we felt that, okay, we don't want to interfere in the administration of the department. If that's what has to happen, at least there are consequences. Because this is one thing that the society out there, even the AG, is talking about, that the consequence management in departments leaves much to be desired. People get away with murder in departments. And we got that report and we put the matter to rest. And thereafter, there was a case of a lady who was a board secretary who was vocal in the meeting. And immediately thereafter, she was found to be not doing her work properly and all that. And as the portfolio committee, we raised this thing with NAC and the department to say, as I said earlier, it's not about the gut feeling, because our gut feeling told us that this was happening because she gave information to the portfolio committee. But if that does not work here, as I said earlier, everything is done according to this book, which is the Constitution, the law, the supreme law of the country, and the acts that are there. So our gut feeling as the portfolio committee didn't work, but
in our heart of hearts, we knew that that lady was being followed because she was vocal on issues within the that were happening within the entity. And what made it worse was that when she told the department things that were happening within the entity, the CEO was informed that be careful because there is someone who's giving out information about the entity out there. And what's that? You know? And if I tell you that this is what is happening, you inform my superior, and I go out and tell other people, because you're not doing anything, what you do is to inform my superior, then what happens to the person who has done this transgression? This is what we are talking about when we are saying consequence management within this department and within its entities should be seen to be done. Now, there were a number of processes. The other thing that as the portfolio committee we were concerned about was the payment of a sum of 90,000 to a service provider for an investigation that was done within the entity. And also, but you responded very fast, Minister, and very well to the point of that other commission. There are so many commissions here. That investigation that was done by a person who was purported to be was a colleague of the CEO. You responded well and instituted another commission. Investigation, forensic investigation. And the results of the findings of that investigation took a long time to come to the committee. And as the committee, we heard about it out there in the public space, that there are results of this investigation, and you know, they were being challenged out there without us having even heard about them. But we did get an indication in the last minute meeting of what these are. And then the DG gave us the results of that investigation and the decisions that were taken by the board of extending the contract of the CEO for 5 years after the investigation had found that there have been transgressions that occurred. And we were shocked. As we said earlier, it's not about the gut, it's not about who you love, it's not about who you hate, but it's about the law, and it's about the trust that the public must have in government. It's your opportunity to elect the parliament to ensure that the public trust is enhanced. And if it is said that this thing, and we said, let us today call the NAC board and try to understand. Minister, the DG did say in the meeting that we had last week that the minister intervened, and we were given minutes to that effect, that the minister actually said, but you can see that people out there are looking at corruption that is happening within the SOEs, within the entities of government. So I am concerned about this. But the council went, and in our earlier meeting, we were told that the buck stops with the minister at all times. You can do what you want to do within the NAC, but at the end of the day, the minister is accountable, because Tina, we give the money to the minister, and the minister gives the money to me. At the end of it, it's the minister that has to respond to these things. So if there is a report, this is what we want to understand. I'm going to give you, honorable members, time to just, because I know age is catching up with me. I may not remember some of the things. But what took the cake was last week's meeting is when we were told about the results of the investigation and the extension for 5 years of the contract of the CEO. Honorable members, just add if there's anything that I have left out before we give over to the minister and then open the matter to the board of council of the NAC to respond. Honorable members? Honorable Makondo?
Thanks, Chair. I think you're still fine with age. You're still fine with age. You have captured it very well. I think I'm fine. I'm fine.
Okay. Do you want to add anything on that to me? Nothing. Okay. Let me then give the minister an opportunity, because you know you've had our side, minister, and we tried to set it from the beginning, you know, just to give you a picture of what has been going on, and we will give the members of the council an opportunity also to just explain to us how, because as I said earlier, we would like to understand. As the portfolio committee, this is what you want to do. And as I usually say, we are related in a way. The department is related to us, although ours is an oversight mandate. But whatever comes in the newspaper, we are the first people to be called. Portfolio committee, can you comment on this? Really? What do we say? So we are related. Whatever you do affects us as well, because the media will come to us to ask questions. Honorable Minister?
Thanks, Chair, and good morning, everyone. I hope it's still the morning. Good morning, everyone. Thanks, Chair, for responding. See, I've been to these meetings where I greet people and they just keep quiet. And I remind them that that's not the proper African way. No, we don't do it that way. So, no, you did respond. I'm saying the members did respond. No, thanks, Chair. I take this opportunity to thank the Portfolio Committee for inviting me to come before it to deal with the matters which the Chair has outlined, including the very first matter of the NAC. But just before that, Chair, may I say that just as a way of reminding each other, as the Chair said when he started, that it is Heritage Month, one of the national day and month celebrated all national days, arts and culture is a custodian thereof. But there are those days which are exclusively about arts, culture and heritage, and this is one of them. We are having it and responding to what would have been raised earlier on, even by the students, on the hashtag Roots Must Fall and so on. Because those things were talking about the heritage landscape, hence the theme for this year, 100 years of Nelson Mandela, transforming the heritage landscape. I'm saying this, Chair, because this year we are going to be celebrating this very important day in our calendar in KwaZulu-Natal, in a place called Kokstad.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And the reason is that to respond properly to the theme itself of transforming the heritage landscape, to remind people about those who fought against colonialism and apartheid. You know, they call the place Kokstad, and it's hidden there. You think it's some stud man or whatever, and yet it's Adam Gok, who, as a leader of the Griqua community, resisted colonialism. And we've got to do that without being apologetic about it, because the constitution itself enjoins us to look into the areas and transform in line with the spirit, the letter, and the values of the constitution. This follows what has been long coming, a place called Grahamstown. Now, the problem is that sometimes we don't follow our own history and understand ourselves. One guy said to me, "No, but why is this name being changed? Because I grew up knowing this name, and it's when you call it, it's nice to, you know, pronounce it and so on." Well, I don't know, but he said that. No, I then said no, but we need to understand everything not from the face value. That once upon a time there was a human being who was one of the cruelest men living on earth, called Colonel Graham, and this man applied what is called scorch earth policy, where he will attack Abantu, indigenous people, Amaxhosa, burn their crops, kill their cattle, and kill and maim children, women, and men alike, with no mercy. In fact, his motto, he used to say, for Africans, we need to apply a proper degree of terror. So he romanticized violence, and he killed people. Now, in that part of the country, one of the people who resisted this viciousness was a man called Makhanda Kanqele, and he fought to defend these people. In the process of fighting, and I went to Isekazini, which we should be commemorating next year, and when he realized that they are being overpowered because of the machinery, those who were fight the colonizers, he then sacrificed himself to be arrested, you know, and he was arrested. 100 years before Mandela was born, Makhanda Kanqele was sent to Robben Island, and he died trying to escape. But Makhanda Kanqele promised the people of Eastern Cape. He said to them, "Don't cry," when they were weeping when he was being arrested. And he said, "I will come back. Ngiyobuya." So, an idiomatic expression from our own people who would say, when something is not happening, you'll wait in vain to say, "Oh, ngiyolinda ukubuya kaMakhanda Kanqele." So meaning, he won't come back. But when we gazetted Makhanda Kangwenya, people said, Umakhanda ubuyile. I'm relating this to say that there's going to be resistance as we transform the heritage landscape. And as we do that, we are responsible, because we have to be guided by the Constitution. And one of the things the Constitution is against is violence. So why would we have this violent person who romanticized it to be in our face? But you see, there are processes in government and people are objecting and so on. That process is on. About 300 people objected, and we have millions of people staying in that part of the country, and we will follow up the process. But I'm raising all this chair to say that our heritage should be used as a glue to unite our people, and people must know the truth. We are not going to be irresponsible and just change anything you see around. Somebody was raising the name Colenso, for instance, said, no, but this is not an African. But what we said is that Colenso, his role to the liberation struggle was positive. He actually was part and parcel of the people. That's why the township there is called Sobantu, because people said to him, "Umuntu wabantu." So you are not going to be irresponsible about that. And Chair, on the 24th, which is the National Heritage Day, the Secretary General of the United Nations, the President of the Assembly, and the President of the Republic of South Africa will be unveiling a statue of Nelson Mandela at the headquarters of the United Nations at the reception there. Now, nobody on earth has any statue anywhere near there. It's going to be Mandela. And the world recognizes the role South Africa has played in ensuring that humanity is better off in this world. So it's going to happen. And we're happy that the as part of arts and culture and as part of the broader family, as the chair has said, we have an opportunity to be part and parcel of that kind of a development. And when after the unveiling, the whole from 9:30 to 6 in the evening, all the 193 heads of state and government of the world would be speaking about the theme for that conference, which is World Mandela as a world peace figure. So the whole of the world would be discussing. Obviously, in terms of time, not all of them, not 193 of them would be able, but a lot of them would, in terms of the allocation which they've been given there. You would have realized, Chair, that whilst I was out there in New York, the Prime Minister of Britain came here, Theresa May. She came and met with the President, our President, and she gave us a bell, Mandy Bell, which is very significant, again, about our heritage. And we are going to... We're engaging Iziko and its own to keep this, because it's something big for us. This is 101 year after the disaster, the Mandy disaster, as it were. So it's something big for us, Chair, and we're happy to be associated with that, because it will keep this thing of those men, brave men, who went out, as Reverend Jehovah told them, "You came here to die," and they died like true heroes, with their boots on, as it were. I'm just galloping, Chair. There are other things which are an impediment for us to build this nation which is socially coherent, and one of them is racism. Racism in our country, whilst we do, from the statute books, it's buried, but you have in our midst racists. And our approach, Chair, has always been, as we spelled out 2 years ago during the debate here on the Human Rights Day, that it's threefold. That one really is to try and persuade people, hoping that they would change, because part of what the liberation struggle was about was to liberate those white people who have a false ideology of white supremacy. So you persuade. But two, you ensure that you strengthen the legislation. So I've been working with the Justice Department to ensure that this law, which outlaws or criminalizes racism, is, you know, speeded up. The third one is to continuously mobilize society about this and explain what it is. It's a pernicious ideology. As Mandela would have said, nobody is born hating another person. People are taught to hate other people and so on. To that score, Chair, you would remember that last year, one company called Unilever had an advert about the Dove product, which displayed racism. And we condemned that, as we do all the time. But we always try to look beyond condemnation. What then do you do? So I decided that I need to call the CEO of this company and make him to account on this thing. And we met, and I said to him that in this country, racism has done a lot of damage. And if we have people like you perpetuating racism, we're going to have a big problem. So we want to turn you to be an agent for change, to be part and parcel of the programs for social cohesion. And they are now part. If you remember the Youth Day, we had the National Youth Day at Orlando Stadium. In the community conversation of people of Orlando a week before, Unilever was part of that. And they also financially contributed. And we say to them, they must contribute financially. And they also fired the person who was part of this adverts, marketing and so on. So I'm then saying, Chair, that these things, we should continuously raise them. All of us, and people would say a lot of things, but they are incorrigible people where you can't do anything. Those ones we say, they must be sent to jail like this Mombech lady, you know. They must go there, you know, because what do you do with somebody? You cook together with the stone, and the stone is cooked first before himself or herself. There's nothing else you can do. And we're on that chair. We will at some point talk about the campaign against the abuse of people with albinism, which we launched on the 13th of June, which is the United Nations International Day on the abuse of people or anti-abuse of people with albinism. That program is continuing. We launched it in Mpumalanga, last week it was here, the campaign was here in Western Cape. Horrible things which are done to our people, to our children, and all sort of wrong myths about people with albinism and so on. I know this week, this coming Friday, another activity will be in KwaZulu-Natal, but all the provinces are coming on board to ensure that we help people and deal with this sketch. The last point I want to raise, Chair, as I gallop, is the issue about what unites us as South Africans. And we thought that over and above the national days, the flag. You see when there are national and international games and so on, you see the flag. So we started the campaign, which is supposed to be ongoing, but as a phase to culminate at the end of this year, where we are planning to have the biggest flag in the face of the people of South Africa. One country which has the biggest flag is in Saudi Arabia. Yeah, about 170 meters long. Part of educating people about this symbol which unites us. We are planning to have one which would be 100 in line with the centenary of Ma Sisulu and Dada Madiba, so that our people understand the importance. So what we are saying is that people should respect the flag. They should know how what you can do and not do with the flag, and they should know that this is the foremost symbol which is our identity. There are many other symbols, and when they raise it, they raise it with pride. I would ask you, Chair, to perhaps as a sequence to get the board to just take through the committee what happened, so that as I came in later also, I say what really happened. That is both on the CEO, and I'm glad you raised also the issue of the board secretary. They'll do that. But also to say, Chair, you know, I don't know whether members know this, the president is of the Republic is one of the ardent readers. He reads not less than 30 books per year. Now, that says that there's an obligation to us to promote this culture of reading and writing. We start today until the 10th is book week. So we just have to exchange notes, not reading books because you have to pass something, but reading for leisure, but also just getting more information and knowledge, because this thing that if you want to, if you hide something in the book, people would know, should be something of the past, because the fact of the matter is that, contrary to the popular view, the younger generation is growing in organizing themselves as groups, study groups in reading and writing. And they may not use what we do, you know, the actual book. They use e-books most of the time. And it's a culture we need to, as long as people read, because a reading nation is a successful nation, you know, because they fight ignorance. And people say that, no, well, books are expensive and so on. But we say that if you think that reading, writing, educating yourself is expensive, just try ignorance. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Minister. Without wasting time, I'm going to give an AC an opportunity to do a presentation or even respond to the things that were raised earlier, so that we don't waste a lot of time. When you refer to, when you talked about this anti-abuse towards people with albinism, I'm reminded of a lady in Port Elizabeth who passed on, may her soul rest in peace. Unasipho, I said, Jongan, uba niphi sizinkawu, nizimfene ke nina. So it's right well, Unasipho, and I think really she was fighting for, oh, And I think what you are raising, and I've seen in one of the TV soapies, Umumango, there is something about albinism as well, because they've introduced two people with albinism. And I think this is important for the community. So you catch the communities where they were in their own interest, and find a way to put in your message. I think it's a good move. Thank you, Minister. Oh, Luzal, okay. Thank you very much. Okay, NAC?
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable Minister, Portfolio Committee members. Good morning. We want to thank the opportunity that the committee has invited us to come and address you on issues that concerns everybody. First, we would like to apologize for the misunderstanding that when we were called on...
Can we introduce ourselves, the NAC board, and if you were there when we met you, but I think if you can introduce yourselves, it will be good for the committee.
Okay, I am Professor Mkhwajana. I'm a member of the board.
I'm Jabul Lamini. I'm in the National Arts Council Board. Thank you. Let me start afresh. Sanibonani, Mhlonishwa Chairperson, Bahlonishwa, Honorable Members, Mhlonishwa Babu Mthethwa, Nongebe Mnene, Limpuma KDAC, meaning in Jabu Ungwaba Dlamini, Deputy Chairperson, the National Arts Council of South Africa, Ngiyabonga.
Hello, Honorable Members. My name is Avril Jaffe. I'm the Chair of the Audit and Risk Committee.
Good morning, Members. My name is Erica Elk. I'm a member of the Council of the Arts Council, and I'm the Chair of the HR Committee.
Good morning. Chairperson, members of the committee, good morning, Minister, and the officials from TAC. My name is Zolani Mkiva. I'm the council member of the National Arts Council. Thank you.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Samin Julie, and I'm a council member.
Everyone, my name is Moshe Kaapleni. In the spirit of Heritage Month, Dilibolo Nelson Pango Mutanga Mugwanya, Tolalem Twagas. I'm a council member of the NAC.
Kabela, Minister, DG, Honorable Chairperson of PPC and PPC members, I'm Nakedi Zibani and member of the NAC Council.
Thank you. All welcome. All thanks.
My name is Jerry Mwagamabuzi Songwa. I'm the member of this council. The National Arts Council.
Salo. Ngongose. Nabasho Nesha. Kamara Mubo Mwagamabuzo. Ngilunga lomkhandlo obaluleke kakhulu onakekela amagugu athi ngocingo nayinyezwa Afrika National Council. Ngiyabonga kakhulu.
Action Elimbobe. I'm a member of the National Arts Council, Norma Diana Lupong.
Good morning, honorable members. I am Togo Zilegano Kape. I'm a council member. I'm from Britney Brown. Thank you.
Good morning, council members. My name is Michael Arnold, and I'm a board member of the National Arts Council.
Thank you very much. You are most welcome. And as the portfolio committee, we really appreciate the fact that you have found time to be with us this morning. We know that you are busy. You know, we know that you are employed somewhere else, but you made it a point that you come here today. That is highly, highly appreciated. And we know that, as we always say as the portfolio committee, the members of councils of these entities are people who give of themselves. You are giving of yourself to the community, to the society as a whole. So we don't take that for granted as the portfolio committee, and we thank you very much.
I want to reiterate the request for apologies. I think there was a misunderstanding at the beginning when the first PPC summons were given. We had just been appointed as a new board. We did not even have a chairperson at that time. We had not even met for the first time. When we had only met for an induction, when we were called in, we felt we needed some time at least to understand the issues on the ground. We had not touched base with the ground, not at all. And therefore, we requested for a postponement, which did not materialize. And it's not because we undermined the role and value of this committee. It's just because we needed to find our feet on the ground so that when you ask us questions, we would really understand what the issues are. And quite certainly the issues that were raised all are issues that happened before we were inaugurated. Therefore, all the issues that we're dealing with even now are issues that have started in the previous board that was disbanded. However, we take responsibility for whatever happens because we can't blame them. We have inherited what we've inherited. We're dealing with it as diligently as we can. When we set our foot on the ground and the series of allegations were made, there was nothing we could do like just charging people on the spot. We had to do our own internal investigation in terms of trying to find what's happening. And at face value, what became clearer with the issues that emerged, which are consistent issues even today, was the issue of increment of salary increments. It was the issue of the bonuses, and it was the issue of most of these issues as they came. And we also found that we also had a problem with records. The records of the NAC in terms of minutes taken were never complete. We had meetings since August 2016 where decisions have been taken, but the proper minutes have never been approved. And we had minutes that had to come before us for approval, and we refused. We wanted to understand why should we approve some of these minutes that were not approved in the previous board, and there was a period when the CEO was both the council and the CEO, and these minutes would have been tabled in that period. And why were they not tabled in that period, and now all of a sudden they should be tabled before us to take responsibility? Then we needed a lot of time to go and investigate. We required the verbatim records of the proceedings, it was a long period. And in every minute, in every meeting, even the, including the meetings that we held, then we found that we did not have proper recordings, even in our own minutes, minutes of our own meetings. That's when the charges were leveled against the board secretary. The charges that were leveled against the board secretary should be clear. It's not because of whistleblowing. Yes, in the charges that were there, I don't have the results of the charges as of now, because. But what happened is, in the interaction when the case in her hearing, the charges that were could be construed to be whistleblowing were all withdrawn, and therefore they were declared invalid. Therefore, she had to deal with charges of other charges that deal with incompetence and capacity. And therefore, the case went on, it proceeded, it's finalized. Now being finalized, we understand now she's at the CCMA, which is within her rights. Therefore, we have not victimized her. We have allowed her to exercise her right. The due process was followed. But then the other question was, we needed to deal with the issues of the CEO, the CFO at that time. We could not have suspended the board secretary, the CEO, and the CFO at the same time. We would have caused, we would have disorganized the whole management and the ADM, because the admin, the art development manager is also implicated in some of the charges, because it means we will have to charge the art development manager, the cinema official, the CFO, the CEO, and the board secretary. We said we start off with the board secretary, then we go to the second level. Now, unfortunately, we undermined the time it will take for the board secretary's case. It has taken almost a full year. When it comes to an end and we are supposed to level charges against the CEO, the ADM, and the CFO, already the CFO who wanted to charge left the company. He has got a job elsewhere. And the finance manager, who would indirectly be charged, affected, also left for another company. Then we inherit, we get another CFO who comes with a blot on her body as well. And at the same time, we get the Kobodo report. And then we say, given the Kobodo report, we will still deal with the charges of the CEO, deal with the charges of the new CFO. It's very complicated, because you have got a management structure which you cannot disorganize at one given time. Now, when we receive the Kobodo report, we agree fully with the Kobodo report. We are not against the report. But in terms of the rules of natural justice, anybody should be given a fair hearing. You can't just dismiss them on the basis of that report. And we have set the process on, and that's why we have got the charges leveled against the CEO now. We are still going to have charges against the CFO. Okay.
Thanks, Chair. I would want to, because of the portfolio committee, we have not been given an opportunity to be given a report, the report that he's talking about, and he's responding. And his response lacks details. If maybe they had a report, but if the report is not there, I will suggest that Chair, maybe when he's talking to us, there should be details. Details such as date, time, and all these are very important to us, other than responding blanketly. We'll get lost on the way. But if there's a report, if you can talk to the report, then a presentation of some
Thank you.
Let me just check on the record.
Perhaps when they are making additions, they must make additions while the presentation is there. Ngoku bekube behamba nje singaqondi basiphi.
Can we have order?
Thank you, honorable members. Thank you, Chairperson. I think the contents reads as such. There's a background and content process undertaken and current status. How do we make this date? Following the date of the visit to the Parliament Portfolio Committee on the 27th March 2018, it has concluded that we wait the Fosenic investigation by Gobodo to be completed. The findings of the Gobodo report were issued on the 18th of April 2018. The report was then presented to National Arts Council Board on the 9th of June 2018. On the 10th, it was further discussed with NEC Board in a closed meeting. The National Arts Council executives, including CEO, were informed of the board's decision on all Fosenic reports issued on the 11th of June. The terms of reference were drafted on the 13th, insourcing an independent chairperson together with the initiator of the disciplinary hearing, who will be leading the evidence on behalf of the NAC. A supply chain management process requested for quotations, RFQ, was undertaken on the 20th of June to suppliers registered on National Treasury Central Supplier Database with the closing date of the 28th of June. The RFQ was sent to 10 suppliers, and upon closing date, only four submitted proposals. Bid evaluation committee was set up to evaluate the proposals based on the terms of reference. Following an extensive SCM process, two service SCM process, the bid evaluation committee concluded its evaluation of the proposal. A letter of appointment dated the 7th of August for both the chairperson and the initiator was sent. Signed letters to serve as a chairperson and the initiator received on the 8th of August 2018. The meeting with the minister was... Yeah, the meeting with the minister was on the was on the 17th of July. Where am I? I'm confusing myself.
Where are you?
Where are you?
Go one up. Go one up. Stand later to the center. You finished there. The next
yeah.
one done.
Let's take 1, 2, 3 back, because I had jumped. Meeting with the minister for 15 July 2018 was postponed to 16 July 2018. Following the extensive SEM process, the Bid Evaluation Committee concluded its evaluation of the proposals. A letter of appointment dated the 7th August 2018 for both the chairperson and the initiator was sent. Signed letters of acceptance to serve as a chairperson and the initiator were received on the 8th August 2018. On the 10th of August, a briefing meeting was set up with the initiator in the presence of the council chairperson, Mr. Hartley Ngwato, and the purpose of that meeting was to provide a detailed briefing of the Gobodo report, analyze evidence and other prescripts in preparation for the drafting of the charge sheet to officially hand over the process to the initiator. Further documents were requested by the initiator on the 15th of August 2018, which were provided on the 15th of August 2018. The chairperson received a first draft of the charges on the 22nd August 2018. Final draft of charges was received on the 24th August 2018. A meeting was scheduled for the 29th of August with the CEO, where she was served with the following: a charge sheet, a notice of disciplinary hearing. The above mentioned documents are served in the presence of the human resource manager and the council of chairperson. The hearing is scheduled for the 12th and the 17th of September 2018 respectively. Thank you.
Thank you very much. This presentation is a presentation from the Council of the National Arts Council. So everybody here stands by this presentation. The questions that we are going to ask to all the members of the council, they know what's in this presentation. We assume. Is that it? So any question is going to be answered not by the presenter of this, but the council members, because they are all part and parcel of this presentation. My first question, what does it take for an individual to be suspended in an entity? What does it take for an individual to be suspended in an, what must I have done for me to be suspended in the National Arts Council? That's the question that I'm having for you as the council. It's not for the presenter, it's for the council as a whole. Honorable member?
What? Very quick, Chair.
I expected the report to also talk to the reappointment of the CEO. It's
I tried to look into this report. It's not there. And I thought the brief, the brief was included that particular process as well. I expected that they should table the process that they followed up until to the latter.
I was also going to say the same thing. But also on the statement you just made, in a form of a question, on the matters that, because I had a sense when the deputy chairperson was presenting that perhaps she's seeing this presentation for the first time. I might be wrong. Because on how she presented it, I was like, where I'm sitting, is she really seeing it for the first time, or she saw the presentation? I think the question that you asked, Che, it's very important that, are they all of them taking ownership of the report? Have they seen the report before they came here to the portfolio committee? I think it's very important that we establish that, Che, before we can go on. Because you might find that others have not even seen the report. Are they all of them? If we were to ask them to take an oath, perhaps, would they swear to this portfolio committee that the contents of the report, they all of them, Che? Thank you.
Do you want to come in?
Yes. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Honourable Members, for the questions. I just wanted to, as the Chair of the Audit and Risk Committee, affirm that we have all seen this report. It was shared with us by the Chairperson prior when we first heard, when we first got the notice to attend the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee. That report was prepared as part of our understanding of what some of the issues were that were going to be presented here. You mentioned in your comments that there was a briefing. We didn't get a briefing, to be honest, about what the issues were to be covered. We assumed the issues to be covered were the issues of the feedback after the Gabordo investigation and what we as counsel had done in terms of running a disciplinary procedure for the CEO, which is why we presented this briefing, this presentation. So the first point is, yes, we've all seen that briefing. The second point is, you asked about what it takes to be suspended. I think I'd like to comment on that. What it takes to be suspended is if there are charges to be leveled against a human a person in the staff or the organization in general, and that person could interfere with the process by which those charges are then dealt with, then it is deemed necessary in terms of labor law to suspend. If the issues that for the charges have been done in the past and there's no interference since there's already detailed evidence, chapter and verse, in an investigation, then it's not necessary immediately to suspend, as there cannot be interference in the proceedings of the issues at hand. So that's in our understanding as counsel when we suspend and the urgency to suspend or not suspend. In the current context, just my last comment, is that we have placed the CEO on special leave for the period of the disciplinary, in order that, number one, she can herself prepare for the charges being leveled against her and prepare for the hearing and to give evidence in the hearing. And we have appointed an interim CEO for the foreseeable future. Thank you.
I want to engage you, Chair, on the issue that relates to suspension. She says you can only suspend a person when maybe that particular person will interfere with the investigation. And what considerations do you have at your disposal whether this person will interfere or not? I want us to pursue this discussion, Chair. Because according to my knowledge, generally the minister is here, the DG is here. If a person is having a senior position in government, that is consideration enough for that particular person to interfere with the process. Because that particular person occupy an authoritative position in government. Obviously, that person can use his power or her power to interfere with the process. It may not be so for a general worker and an admin clerk, but people who are working in an authoritative position, it could be DG, DDGs, CFOs, maybe especially those who are working in supply chain, they can even interfere with documents. But I want here to brief us, Chair, what considerations do you have at your disposal when to suspend and when not to suspend that particular person? Thanks, Chair.
And also, I think to add to that, the process that led to the extension of the 5-year contract, I think you need to say that as well to inform the portfolio committee, because this was the interest that we had in our last meeting, and the department knows that we wanted to know what processes were involved in this. Minister?
Actually, I wanted to start on that point and say that the report does say that we met, which we did with the council when I asked for the meeting. It was after, mainly for me, I heard that there is an extension to the CEO. Not just an extension, but 5 years, the whole term extension. Now, what I said is that, I was saying this, Chair, clear about my role of not interfering with the operational side and the fiduciary duty of the board or the council, but at the same time, having responsibility as the executive authority over the process, that I would have erred on the side of caution. Made an example that, you see, it's the whole term. We are not casting aspersion to the CEO. If perhaps you would have said 6 months or a year or whatever, allow the process to take its course and so on. And I had to leave it at that, Chair. I had to leave it at that because not many entities have a clear-cut section or act which says that the council appoints the CEO, but here it happens like that. So they are going to explain. But my issue, Chair, was looking ahead, that there is both a short-term and a long-term need of an intervention here. I will just talk in broad terms, Chair, that there is short-term in terms of the actual process and so on, but there is longer-term in terms of the legislation now, which would need to be looked into. You see, even when you spell out concurrent, that would suffice. It doesn't undermine the powers of the council and so on, but at the same time just say that as a caution, because caution is always important, because sometimes you may not see what is coming, but if you are cautious, we are able to avoid whatever. So I thought, Chair, I'll leave it at that without getting into details, but just say that indeed the board did respond to me and they will be responding now after I've said my say to them.
Thank you very much, Minister. Minister, this is the board that has employed a CFO that is from NFVF that has been found guilty of something. How does this board, for instance, if you're going to employ someone, you check, there are references, you do check, where was your last employment? You check with NFVF. Well, NFVF, this person was, why did he or she leave your employ? Did this board do that? Did they check with NFVF? It's worse because these are entities that are within the department. You know, these are entities that are within the department, and someone has just resigned and resigned from one entity, get employed in another entity within the same department. And I'm like, wow. Do you want to come?
Thank you, Chair. We understand the context in which people get concerned. Really, maybe I should respond to the last comment you are making about inheriting somebody from another. The witness is in the delegation of powers. In terms of the delegation of powers of the NAC board, the CEO, irrespective of who he or she is, appoints people below her or him. And therefore, in that regard, that was an omission on our part because of the delegation of responsibilities. And when we saw it, because it came from the BIG report, when it came from the BIG report, we recognized this anomaly and said we need to intervene going forward so that we revise the delegation of responsibilities so that we know where these powers are limited. Because now we saw that we have inherited somebody who has cost another entity the same thing that she may likely cost us. And that's why we have resolved. We are going to charge her, even if for dishonesty, because she has not disclosed. Even if she did not, it's not to the board, but the CEO, because the CEO was acting on behalf of the board. Now.
Okay. There's a follow-up from me.
Okay.
If the DG employs someone who is not...
Something that is being raised of lack of consequence management in government and entities. I do whatever I want to do. I employ whoever I want to employ. And there are no consequences for that. Because you're going now to charge
the CFO, your CFO in the end. He or she did not employ himself or herself. Someone employed her, and that person has to account for that.
I think you have covered that part, because I wanted to say, when you are in a senior position and you are employee, let me make an example with the DG. When the DG has to appoint a DDG, the first thing you do, the background check. You do the background check of that person. We've got agencies within government that assist in terms of looking for that if you can't do it as a person. So I really wouldn't want the board to defend that. Because as I'm seeing where it's going, it's the issue of defending what the CEO has said. She failed. She failed to do what she was supposed to do as an authority that is responsible for employing whoever comes after her in that entity.
The other thing that I wanted to establish, Chair, from the presentation that was made by the council member there, I didn't get their names, Chair. It's a lot of them. I forgot their names. She, on the issue of interference, I just want to establish on the matter of the interference, the, my question will go on the issue that Honorable Makondo has raised in the issues of the interference. Who appoints? The board has recommended whoever is going to be the chairperson of the panel and all those things. But then, who is supposed to do the actual appointment and the payments and everything? Who is supposed to do that? My assumption is the CEO. So wouldn't she interfere with the process? Because she's the one who has to make the payments and all those things. The board doesn't do that. That delegation is with the person who is the CEO. In making sure then, how do they really know that she is not going to interfere with all those processes that are going to happen in the institution? Because the responsibility of the board is more or less on the issues of governance and so on and so on and so on and so on. But the management and the payments and everything, the person who is supposed to authorize that is the CEO. And if she feels that she wouldn't, she does not agree, she wouldn't even authorize that, because the law empower her to do the authorities in terms of paying and all those things, Chair. We will continue with a lot of questions, Chair, but after, for now, we would really want to establish, I think the matter of the interference, the suspension is very critical here. Maybe we don't see it the same way that they see it. And Chair, should we need to allow other members to answer here, members of the board. Should not limit it only to the two members that are here. And I'm even assuming that the deputy chairperson should be the one who is leading all these discussions, Chair. Because she's the one who, after the chairperson, the next person in command is the deputy chairperson. And she seems to be silent, Chair. And also the other members would appreciate if other members can also add their voice on what we are raising here, Chair.
Maybe the issue of the suspension. What is it called? Cautionary suspension. Yes, cautionary suspension. Three cautionary suspension of the... Maybe if you can give us dates, when did this happen? Honorable Mokot?
No, the question is not
the
question.
No, Chairperson, mine is a clarity to the board. I just wanted to know what is the role of the council and what is the role of administrative. Remember, the CEO and the CFO fall under the administration, not under the strategic part of it. So what the presenter was saying to us, that the delegation power lies with the CEO. To me, I thought it lies with the council. Who employed the council is you. The council came to the admin, the CFO, the CEO come to the interviews. Who employs the CEO is the council. The CEO doesn't appoint himself. Then it goes again, Chair, to the HR committee. Where is the HR committee of the council? Because if you go to Kings 1, 2, and 3, it will tell you that the important part, and 4, thank you for 4, it will tell you the important part of the HR committee. So if here there's no an HR committee, so who's doing the oversight in terms of the recruitment of the council? So if it's only the CEO who's doing that, is a transgression in terms of the issues of board. I think maybe they need to tell us here who are sitting on the HR committee, because all the applications, the CVs are going to them, not to the CEO. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. The CEO was served the charge sheet on the 29th of August. And I think here in the report it is said that the chairperson of HRC committee as well the human resource manager and the chairperson Mr. Hartley Ngwato were handling this matter of the charging of the CEO. And the cautionary leave, as the chairperson is saying, it is between, the hearing is scheduled for the 12th and the 17th. And I think she has, leave has been granted to her. I just need to check on the dates on what the leave is. And she's not in the office. She had to leave, her last day in the office was last week because she had to leave for a bereavement, I believe. She had a burial that she had to attend to, and I do not think that she will come back after that burial until the hearing.
The question that she was asking, in fact, who was processing the appointment of the initiator and the chairperson? Those are administrative issues. You saw quotation, there's bid adjudication, there were people who will be appointed to serve in the evaluation and budget. Who was dealing with those issues?
The chairperson and the HR manager were dealing with that thing, as far as I believe.
I mean the chairperson of the HR committee.
Thank you, honourable members. Can I take us back a few steps because it feels to me that we're dealing with a number of issues right now, but actually there's been a process that we've been engaged in over a period of time, and I think some of the questions that you're asking around the extension of the term of contract of the CEO. So, but I want to preface what I'm saying by three things. I think the first thing is that I think you all understood the environment that we came into as the new board came into last year during the context of your visit. I unfortunately was not present at that meeting. But coming in as the new board, we needed the imperative was to try to stabilize the situation, to try to understand the situation, and then to move forward to A, continue to get the work done. So the sector is crying, artists are crying for support from the organization. So we couldn't bury ourselves in dealing with human resource issues. We had to make sure that the organization carried on functioning. And we also needed to make sure that we were following due process and for all parties concerned. So my council member has taken you through the issues around the board secretary, and that we were treating as phase one. And phase two then became the issue of the CEO and senior management and the allegations raised in relation to those staff members. Concurrent to that, so essentially we've been dealing with a very complex situation where the two processes have been running concurrently. The one related to the allegations levelled against the CEO, and the DAC had appointed Gobordo to do their investigation. While that investigation was running, our hands were tied as a council to act against the CEO, because if we had acted against the CEO at that point while the investigation was running, our process would have been called into question. At the same time, the term of office of the CEO was coming to an end, and we needed to deal with that issue from a legal point of view as well, because the contract couldn't just end. We needed to manage that process. So the process that we put in place, and I can take you through that process if if I have your permission to do that, I'll do it quite quickly. But we basically, a council appointed a review committee which comprised the chairperson of council, the chairperson of audit and risk, and the HR committee. And we were mandated to do a review of the CEO's 5-year term of office, which in a way is our obligation and her right as an employee. That was a two-part process. The CEO reported to us in terms of her contractual obligations and how she had met her KPIs over the period of her term of office.
I had a problem with the professor here when he was responding, when we don't have that report that we're talking about and it's left to say. If what you are saying you can put dates, so that we understand, look, the issues that we need to understand that relate to when this thing happened. But if you tell us a story, then we'll have a problem.
So, Chairperson, I can take you through the actual dates. I'm so mindful of time. We can circulate this report, but can I carry on with dates? So I will go through the report. So the CEO was appointed on the 1st of July 2013, and her contract expired on the 30th of June 2018. In the HR committee, we met at our first meeting in February this year, so on the 7th of February. This issue came up around the CEO's term of office and us needing to instigate a process to deal with it. We wrote a letter to the chair and asked for a process to be instigated. And one of those processes needed to be the conclusion of the CEO's annual performance review for the 2017-18 financial year, which can only be concluded when the financial year is finished. So that could only take place after March 2018. The matter, our request was tabled at a council meeting on the 17th of February, and at that council meeting, council agreed to appoint this committee that I've mentioned and how that committee was comprised. We had the first meeting of that committee was on the 18th of March, and the CEO presented a report to us in terms of her how she had met her KPIs. Now remember that the annual performance reviews, and we were doing a 5-year sort of contractual performance review for the 5 years of her contract. So the first meeting was on the 18th of March, and the annual performance review could not yet be concluded. We had to wait for the end of March. So we agreed that that would happen, and that is driven by the CEO and the chairperson of council. So that happened, and then we asked the CEO to come and do a complete presentation, and we actually have that report that she presented to the committee that we can circulate to you should you want to see it. We then had a second session on the 5th of May. And all the committee members were in attendance in that, and the following were the documents that were given to us. So I'll take a narrative report reflecting the 5 years of the term of office of the CEO, the CEO's original contract with her KPIs and the outputs that she was contractually bound to perform on, a performance matrix showing how she had performed against her KPIs over the 5 years, the concluded performance reviews for every 5 years, basically other supporting documentation to support her claim that she had met her deliverables and her KPIs as the CEO. We then, as the committee, sat and we engaged with the CEO. We asked her questions. It was not an easy process. The members of the committee, some of the members of the committee are sitting here, because also remember And the current here is the Gobodo report. We're still waiting for the Gobodo report. We don't know what it is going to be telling us. But we have to deal with this as a due process, as a legal process that we are bound to as an organization. And then the CEO recused herself from the session, and the committee sat and deliberated. And on the basis of her performance as a CEO, in terms of what she had achieved, the allegations notwithstanding, as the CEO, as the leader of the organization, the committee unanimously felt that we needed to reappoint her. But we took into account that we were waiting for the Gobodo report, and there were these allegations pending, and we would then need to deal with those allegations. I'm not going into the. I mean, I could, if you want me to, just in terms of the achievements of the CEO in that we identified, and then our representation, our recommendation was taken to the council meeting. That council meeting happened on the 9th and the 10th of June, which was the same weekend, basically. We sat on a Saturday and a Sunday that the Gobodo report was presented to the council. So we were having to deal with both of these issues at the same time. And the decision, and I mean, you've asked for all the council members to make their comments, but actually to even proceed with the Gobodo report and to deal with the disciplinary process, the CEO needs to be an employee of the organization. So if we had not renewed the contract of the CEO, then she would have left the employ of the organization, and we would not be able to discipline or take any action, as you are saying, any sort of consequential responsibility for actions taken. And so that was our decision to reappoint was made on the basis of performance, but subject to, we knew that we would have to initiate disciplinary process immediately. And the reason around the 5 years or 3 months or 6 months or whatever, we don't know how long a disciplinary process is going to take. We thought the disciplinary process with the board secretary would take a month. It took a year. And the outcome of the disciplinary process will guide us in terms of what the next step, whether it's 5 years or 6 months or a year or 3 months, the disciplinary process will tell us what to do.
Okay,
it's a pity because we are in a portfolio committee, we are not in as much as we are inquiring. Maybe perhaps if we were there on Judge Zondo's inquiry now, I would say this is a witness that is not reliable, Chair. Because what she has said here, really, I find it very difficult now to trust her. Let me take them back to the report, Chair, that they've presented in this portfolio committee. Just the first page, it says that the findings of the Gobodo report were issued on the 18th of April, 2018. It doesn't matter, really. It doesn't matter. The AC will respond to that. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter at all. And please, there is one chairperson in this portfolio. I don't know when you have your council meeting, whether you just interject on people. Here in the portfolio committee, we don't do that. Please refrain from doing that, Chair. Chair, the findings were reported on the 18th of April. And somewhere, somehow, I think in May or June, before all of these things, the minister met with them. And I will assume whatever the minister was discussing with them, he raised the matter of the findings that are coming out of the board before they can even reappoint this person. Because the person has been reappointed, is it 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, in July. Already by that time, even if the report was not presented in the council, but the minister has taken them into confidence on the matters when they were planning to do this, but they ignored her to do that. They ignored to do the right thing. So I really find it difficult to understand all of these things that have been presented. But the question that I have, Chair, is here is the person, here is Bongi. Now I'm going to talk about myself. Here is Bongi. I've got a contract with whoever and I'm performing so well in such a way that they really want to keep me for another year. What is the process that they are supposed to do? Should we bypass the laws of the Republic to make sure that Bongi is reappointed? Because there is a process that needs to be followed when a person is reappointed in a public service. Whether you want that person or not, there is a process. And I don't hear her taking us into confidence. The process that is supposed to be to happen when the post is being filled. Because the contract of this CEO came to an end, whether we like it or not, whether he performed 100% or 200%, his contract was coming to an end. And there is a process that is supposed to happen in this country by means of either you advertise or you do hard, whether you're still going to take me, to reappoint me. But there are processes that I have to be followed, which I don't see her taking us into confidence of those processes. Have they done the processes that are required in filling of vacancies, in filling of posts, even in other entities? This is not the first entity that has got a CEO who is performing beyond the levels of performance. This is not the first entity, Chair, or the first, whether it's a department or whatever, that has got a person that you are eyeing, that this person, we are going to keep the person come next day. But processes have to be followed, irrespective of a person performs beyond the level. But I don't see her taking us to that. Now we talk about the law now. What does the law say when a contract of a person comes to an end and your intention is to renew that? We are a constitutional democracy. It's not only yourselves as the NNC, as a board that is looking at whatever that is happening. The whole country is looking at what is happening in the institution. So because of the performance, you felt that you're going to bypass any law that is there in the Republic. Because that's exactly what you are giving us here. That because this person is performing, then this is what you are going to do. Whereas there is a cloud that is hanging over this person. In her performance, I think she fails even to disclose what she has done incorrectly so. Because these matters, Chair, even when we were there last year in NAC, we raised them, even with the department, that there are these issues, these red flags that are happening. I don't know whether in her key performance, whatever, whether these red flags, as a council, you did also raise them, that we've got this and this that is on top of your head. Even before the report can come out, the Komodo report, the issues were already there. They are even in the public domain. And there is what is this guy? Where emails coming in ban. Nyathela was always also raising them. Nobody would Nyathela we have pulled out your training, but sometimes at some stage you smell as my man. Because he was always, as a member of the public, as a citizen of the Republic, he was always raising these matters. But I don't see you telling us of the process, Chair. The process of the law, what does it say? Because I believe that NAC has got a recruitment campaign or whatever, a recruitment strategy on recruiting people to come in, whether you are in or not, or what. Sometimes, Chair, there is these things that departments do where the post will be internally advertised, where everybody can apply, and and perhaps if you qualify, you then you will be reconsidered. But on this one, I don't even hear you saying that we did perhaps that we followed that process where the post was internally or advertised for everybody to can apply. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Makondo and Honorable Mkhosi.
Okay, Chair. Chairperson, thanks very much. I thought maybe the minister was going to clarify the issue that relates to the contract, whether it is an extension or a reappointment. It's not clarified, Chair. But as it may, Chair, it looks like it's a new contract altogether. Chair, I would want to sympathize with the minister in relation to this department. I know that we can't expect the minister to be in the office almost every day to check what is happening. But myself, Chair, is that there was a collusion on this matter between the departmental officials and the NAC board. Last time we met with the NAC board, I think we were in this room. Yeah, in this room. I said to the chairperson of the NAC board that you have made your business to protect the CEO. He failed to denounce it. Yes, Chair. We are sitting with a person that has been reappointed. A person who had a case together with the CEO of increasing their bonus above access. Besides the forensic investigation of Gobot, and nothing, Minister, was done, including to recoup the money that was paid to her illegally. Nothing by this board. Number two, Chair, let me not number them because there are very few quite issues. Number two, Chair, it relates to the contract which the CEO has entered into with the board. I'm not so sure whether the purported disciplinary hearing that is set is going to take place will bear fruit, Chair. Because from the beginning, this board, maliciously delayed the process of disciplining this particular person that we're talking about up until they renew their contract, because their actions were very clean from the beginning. And the officials of the department abated them by not making sure that when the report is received on the 18th of April, this board has that particular report before they begin the process of assessment, reappointing, and all those things. And I can assure you, Chair, this disciplinary actions that they're talking about, it's not gonna lead to the expected outcome as per the transgression that has taken place. Because it has already been marked by the processes that follow towards that. I expected that for a purpose of initiator will not necessarily be administratively from the NAC. I thought maybe the department should have taken this up in terms of assisting the board administratively to ensure that there's an appointment of a chairperson who's independent. The initiator was independent. Because the very same person who's going to sign the check of the people who are going to preside over this disciplinary hearing is the very same CEO who's going to pay the people who are going to discipline her. That is very sad. But the other issue, Chair, which I think is going to be a problem, Minister, it relates to a contract. The CEO has a new contract. And this contract that she has is clean. She has never committed any misconduct within this particular contract. The contract which she has misconduct in was the previous contract, and that has lapsed. Whatever that happens, be ready to argue that in court if she's found guilty in this contract that she has just signed in. I can argue, if it was myself, I can argue that this is a new contract, I have done nothing wrong in this contract, and therefore I cannot be charged and be disciplined about my previous contract when that one has lapsed. It's a matter that you might deal with it as. But my problem, Minister, is that on their minutes they are saying you were fine with the process that see if you go and check their last sentence on their minutes. They said no, they've briefed the minister and the minister is fine with what the board has done. What does that mean? Because these people, they are acting on your behalf. It's a fiduciary duty, what they have. And if they say you are fine, they are saying you are okay with it. This person has to be given a new contract when there is a finding, and serious finding for that matter, that relates to finances. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Mokgosi.
The Chairperson, Honourable Makonde has covered me in other questions, but I just wanted to know the status of labour, how labour issues are there, because Chair, if the CEO, things are not holding up there, and you do have the unions, I know Nihau is one of the unions there, and that last time when we were there, Nihau did came and tried to tell us that they're having a problem with the management. So I just wanted to know the issue of labor stability, what is happening in terms of the reappointment extension. And the deputy chairperson, you said that the CEO went for funeral, maybe she won't come back. Is that the suspension or what? We need a clarity on that. What if she's coming back? So if maybe Chair, they can assist us with that.
Thank you, Honourable Members. I remember in the last meeting that we had with NAC, Honourable Makondo asking the question to the chairperson, why are you not acting against, the first question was, when is the contract expiring? And they said, when? Then why are you not acting on these matters that are before you? We need to go and get the recording of that, to listen to the response of the chairperson, because that question was asked directly to him. Because Honorable Makonde was saying that if the
contract is expiring very soon. Then why are you waiting? Why are you not disciplining the CEO? And I didn't hear about what chairperson Swamp and yes, we need to go back and listen to what he said. But it was to us, to me, as a person who's outside the thing, it was clear that the board or the council, through the chairperson, is not prepared to charge the CEO. It was clear. Because we asked, the question was asked, yes, why are you not proceeding? And I cannot tell you what he said. We still have to go back because that question is clear in my mind. But the response, I can't remember what he said, what you were waiting for. And can we, as the portfolio committee, be given the copy of this contract? Because it was said earlier that you have given her the contract pending, you know? Is this what the contract is saying? That we are giving you a 5-year contract pending the investigation or the disciplinary action or whatever. Can you respond to some of the things that were raised? Can we be given an idea of how much we've spent Kulenduka NAC? We can, yeah. That thing will again have, we need to get that information, how much we have spent on this whole thing of the CEO trying to do whatever we're trying to do that we don't understand what it is. TG, please. Honorable, hold on.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I think we've been dealing with the same matter in different ways. The understanding of the contract, remember, if we look at those dates, the Kobota report goes to the DAC on the 18th of April. In May, HRC meets to finalize the review of the CEO's report. The Human Resource Committee reports to Council on the 9th, on a meeting scheduled for the 9th and the 10th. In the same meeting, then came two officials from the Department of Arts and Culture to hand over the Kobota report. We didn't know it was coming on that day. Then when it came, we had to, already we had recommended the extension of the term of the CEO on the basis that if we do not extend it, we will not be able to take action against her because it was expiring in the next 2.5 weeks. Therefore, it would mean we would not extend it and then we would not be able to deal with it. And if we don't, on the basis of the report that was served before us, then we would also be charged for a constructive dismissal. We didn't want to deal with, there could be allegations of constructive dismissal that we have waited until the end of her term and we had not informed her in time that she's not renewable. But then, why we took five... No, let me finalize what I was presenting then.
But I want to ask a question with that one.
Okay.
You're talking about constructive dismissal when the contract is expired. What do you think?
My question on this point
is that if I'm on contract, this is my understanding, 3 months before the end of my contract, you inform me what is going to, what did you tell the CEO?
If
This is basically our point, because we were waiting for the year, the financial year to end. We had done the first process in the, of the review in March. The last process of the review happened only in May, and her contract was coming to an end in June. And that's why we, the technically the time was very limited to give her 3 months notice in terms of saying her term is coming to an end, we will not do. But then we had to sit and decide, do we give a short period of extension or a longer period of extension? Given the context that we have had with the board secretary, where we thought it will take a month or two, and it has taken us a full year, we said if we take, we argued, the board had to argue between an extension of 24 months, 36 months, and say, suppose we take 24 months extension, and that in that extension, events unfold such that the case is not finished within the 24 months. It will take us back to square one. What are we going to do at the end of the 24 months? Renew or not to renew? What do we do with the case that is on? Then we thought the best, the ideal way would be, let's give it 5 years. Let's give her the charges. Let's give the charges. The charges are all gross. Because all the charges are gross, negligence, gross, they are dismissible charges. In case she's found guilty, she'll be dismissed, even if it's after a week in the 5 year contract. That's our understanding. The minister, of course, when he presented this to the minister, the minister's response was very clear to us, to say, perhaps we should have exercised caution and made a shorter period. In the shorter period, we would have to wait and see what would have happened than to give it 5 years, so that we could have considered this, that we are an extension of our own arm. Perhaps we should have been very cautious in terms of not doing the 5 years. And already we had already disclosed that we were going to do the 5 years. There was no way we could go back. Thank you.
Can they please not dodge the question? Mm-hmm. You ask a critical question, that have they informed her or remind her, when you are in a contract, normally it's either you are reminded that your contract as Bongi is going to end at this time. Whether they've got an intention of renewing it or not, like any other employee. I mean, a CEO is not better than any other employee in that institution that has got a contract. The normal procedure is you inform a person so that the person can prepare herself that my contract, have you as NAC inform or remind, whatever the word that can be used, that her contract is ending. Whether you've got intention or not, did you do that as NAC?
Can you note the
person's
honorable court wants to honorable?
Thank you, Chair. I've been trying to get this whole thing together. Because on the 10th of June, the council already decided they're not going to suspend the CEO, and they did it again on the meeting of the 16th of June, knowingly. So now, the problem that I currently have now is, I don't know, the noble idea, we cannot suspend the person because he or she will not have to answer. And if you know a person has to answer allegations, why then not appoint him on then to act in that position so that you still have control? But then you go into a 5 year contract. And added to that, these allegations against it, I don't see the allegation about the appointment of the CFO. If that, I don't know, I'm not sure if that falls under the CEO, the appointment of the CFO, because he or she left under a cloud from the National Film and Video Foundation, but yet been appointed. I think we haven't dealt with that vetting, we haven't dealt with that issue sufficiently. the answer, the board hasn't answered that. But I'm trying to get a sense that being noble of nobility has is above the above ethics. If I'm trying to bring these two together, it's a noble idea. Yes, you want to save government money. You want to, if you said you want to recoup the money that was from the CEO, then maybe there would have been some argument in it. But there's nothing in this that you want to recoup any of the money. It's only about discipline, and you haven't. I don't think it's not prudent to say what the discipline would have been. But I'm still trying to really understand how the board that has such high esteem that you. I mean, you do it this way. I'm still trying to get to understand that. Maybe I'm a little doff here.
Thank you, Honorable. Thank you, Honorable Member. Honorable Bilango.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is more or less like the one that has been asked by Honorable Solis. I think the chairperson is not responding to the question. I wanted to ask chairperson that why can't we get other responses from other members of the board than the chairperson only? Because it's like he's contradicting himself or the answers that he's giving. It's unsatisfactory to the committee members. Talking about the Gobodo report, they said they were aware of it 2.5 weeks before the end of the term end of the CEO. He also indicated that they were not in agreement as board members as to when is the period that they are going to stipulate for reappointing of the CEO. They ended up agreeing a 5-year term. Were they only using their common sense, or there are policies that were to be followed when they do that reappointment or not? That's the reason I'm saying, Chairperson, that I think it's good if we can get other members from the board to get in clarifying some of these issues. Thank you, Chair.
Just one. Professor Ye is talking about a constructive dismissal. I want to know the law that says that you can inform somebody that their contract is ending. If it's after 3 months, this is just a week before that contract expire or tomorrow. What law that says that you can't do that?
Can we have responses from the council?
Chairperson, let me start off with a question that relates to the meeting which we had with the minister. I think, quite honestly, the minister reprimanded us for the reappointment. I think I need to place that on record. And in his opening remarks here, he referred to the exercise of caution. This is what he communicated to us, that we should not have made this, if we took a decision to reappoint, we should not have at least made it 5 years. It should have been 6 months or a year. Especially that we knew that there were issues which were flowing from the Lalela project, the issue of increment of salaries and so on. So on that score, we understood and made our apology as the board to the minister for having erred in that regard. So I think we ought to say the same here, to say that in the course of work, we do commit some mistakes. And in this regard, I think in hindsight, we think we should not have reappointed the CEO at least for that five-year period. Maybe we should have made it for a shorter period for the same reasons that the colleagues have mentioned. Because our decision was that we needed to have the CEO still in-house in pursuing the issues that flow from the Komodo forensic report so that we can hold her accountable for those issues. Secondly, the CEO is not in office now. We have given her leave of office. I'm not one of those who are good with English, with precautionary leave or special leave or leave of office, but what I can assure the portfolio committee is that she is not at work and she has been now served with the papers where she is charged for gross negligence, for failure for dishonesty, amongst other things. And she will be appearing before the disciplinary hearing. So there's a process in place, and we are going to be calling a special board meeting to deal with other issues that flow from the Komodo report. But we felt that we needed to take one step at a time so that we don't bring the institution into disrepute and to disorganize its duties, because there's still an expectation for us to service the sector, the arts sector, and we are behind schedule in terms of issues that relate to funding. And these are matters of bread and butter for the artists and the arts organization out there. But we are moving with speed and want to give assurance without being on a defense mode that we are dealing with the Komodo report and we are in a process of implementing issues that flow from it. And in conclusion, on my side, we don't want to contradict each other, and we took a decision that we are going to be led by Professor together with the Deputy Chair, so that there are not many, we sing from the same hymn sheet. We take full responsibility of the things that have happened. The good thing is that the National Arts Council is one of the best performing agencies of the Department of Arts and Culture. Perhaps we are overwhelmed by the fact that we have had clean audits in the recent past financial years, and we made emphasis on those issues and overlooked other issues in this context, because the CEO has very good sound management skills, and it's unfortunate that there was this dark cloud over her on these two matters, which relates to the increment and the Lalela project. On the overall, I think you will agree with us that her record speaks for itself, but you know that when there's a dark cloud and there's negativity, it tends to upscale and overshadow the goodness. Perhaps it is that also overwhelmed us. And lastly, we did not advertise. Maybe we need to confront that question head on. We didn't advertise the post, and I think it's another mistake that we have to accept before you, that we should have done so that we comply fully with the law. Because her contract ended, we should have done that. But there is also a general practice that is employed by other entities of the state wherein a contract is simply renewed on the basis of best performance. But again, in hindsight, we want to apologize and say that we should have done so that we are in full compliance with the law. Thank you very much.
Honorable.
I want to ask Mr. Mkhill. At least he's being honest. that if they don't renew the contract of the CEO, they were not going to take action against them. Why did they think that?
No, we didn't think that we're not going to take action against it. Any person who had communicated that, then that person was misleading the portfolio committee. We have always been of the view that because these are senior people in the organization that are implicated, and therefore you can't take them all at once and suspend them. We said we'll take this thing step by step so that we don't disorganize the institution to a point where there's anarchy in the organization. So we started with the company secretary, because in terms of the manual of the institution...
No, I'm not talking about that yet. Let me help you.
Oh, sorry.
Let me help you.
It was said here, Mr. Mkiwa, that you decided to renew the contract. You give her another 5-year contract because there were issues that relate to her conduct and you wanted to discipline her. I'm not so sure if you heard that. Before I continue. Did you hear that? It was said here. It was said here that even here in your minutes, it's here. You can read the minutes. It is said that you wanted to renew the contract because you wanted to hold her responsible. You wanted to discipline her.
No.
It's in the minutes. It's here in the minutes.
Yeah.
I can read it for you if you don't mind. If that goes to the issue which the chair has said, are all of you in agreement of these minutes?
No, not the minutes.
But the report that was the submission that was here. Because I'm talking about the issues that are here. These are your minutes. Here. It is said here in this minute that you are renewing the contract because you think it's going to be feasible to deal with somebody who is in the system. That's what is here. So I'm asking a question. At that time when you take that decision, did you think that you could not take an action for somebody whom a contract has expired and is at home? That's my question.
Now, let me first deal with these questions of draft minutes. We have not yet... I don't know how they got here, as a matter of fact. That's why that the... Let me finish. But the primary reason for the reappointment of the CEO was based on the performance, not because there were issues. The issue that is mentioned in this draft minutes of the council meeting is not a primary factor. It was an over and above. But primarily, the reason why the CEO was reappointed, that is because it was a performance-based measurement, which has been undertaken by our Human Resource Committee. I hope that answers your question.
Can we ask him to finish that? Okay. In this portfolio committee today, few hours ago, I think the hour that is before the hour that we are in, the council member said it here. She said it here that they wanted to deal with the CEO while she's still ngaphakathi. So mhlambe khanga ivuta tumkiva ibona uba ezi minutes zinqina into eniyithethileyo, wayinyathelela umama am uba funeka uba iza kwenzeka ngaloo ndlela soze ndimsuse, ndifuna udilishana naye lapha ngaphakathi. And really it shows, because after a portfolio committee meeting last week, that's when they started acting. Mm-hmm. After what we deliberated on in the portfolio committee, because we talked about it in the portfolio committee last week, Minister, issue kaka CEO yoba ibe ungaphakathi. So I will assume that the department has engaged with them, and then voila, the CEO now is suspended.
or the whatever leave for the Lord of Amnigeo.
Chairperson, I did say that, and because it was one of the factors, but I think that what so let me try and
gather. Because you're sitting next to each other.
So can I refer you to the I just want to refer you to the act which is what was guiding the process that we adopted as the National Arts Council in relation to the CEO, and the fact that her term of office was coming to an end and we needed to decide whether we wanted to reappoint or not with all of the allegations going on. 13 in the National Arts Council Act point 3 says the chief executive officer shall be appointed for such period and subject to such conditions, including conditions relating to the payment of remuneration allowances, as the council may, subject to 15.1b, determine, and may be reappointed on the expiry of his or her period of office. So we were conducting ourselves in terms of due process in terms of the act, but also in terms of how we understand labor legislation. Our primary focus was on the conduct of the CEO in terms of implementing her contractual obligations in terms of her KPIs. That was the basis on which we said we would renew. And I mean, you are telling us that we have erred, and I think we need to go back and think about that. But we reappointed on the basis of performance and then said subject to us dealing with this issue of disciplining her against the allegations, working on the premise that somebody is innocent until proven guilty, and we had to run the process so that the truth can come out and we can deal with the allegations. Maybe you haven't seen the charges that have been leveled, but they're very serious charges. They're charges of gross misconduct.
But you haven't responded to the question.
The question is, as the board, do you believe that it would not be possible for you to pursue those charges with the CEO outside the organization or the institution? That's the question that Honorable Makondo is asking. And point to an act or a law that tells you that you can pursue a person that's outside the organization. They can do whatever they want in the department and resign. Nothing is going to happen to them. Point us to a legislation that tells you that.
Thanks, Chair. Maybe first on this issue, when you deal with the labor relations, you separate the issue of conduct that deals with behavior within the organization vis-a-vis criminality, which you can then pursue through the criminal process. And then that is where they should be clarifying the issue. Because if they don't, then it will create confusion. They can still pursue her if, in terms of criminal procedure, she has committed acts that borders on criminality. Disciplining her when she's already outside of the organization, no longer the employee, on matters within the board, she would not be able to call her, because she would not be able to, because I'm no longer your employee. Now, when the question is raised around which I wanted to clarify on this thing, when the board already knew, Chair, about the issues of Lalela, they had done their own investigation. So they could have acted around that matter, but then they acted maybe waiting for not knowing whether there will be a conflict in terms of what Kuboto will say vis-a-vis their own findings of what she is already allegedly had committed as transgressions within the organization. So when the report was received by the department in April, there was the other process that we normally do with all forensic reports. We do not immediately receive and then hand it over. We have to look at whether this report complied with all the terms of reference. We needed to engage with the people who were doing it and then hand it over to the chair, to the board concerned. The question that was raised in particular by when did they know about the forensic? I think the minister was very clear. The meetings they held on the 9th and the 10th, a decision was made in June already. They had made a decision, but they had not yet issued the letter for her reappointment. It was a decision that they had made. I met with the chairperson because I had got the information that there was an intention to reappoint her, and in particular that also for 5 years. If you look then at the reasons that he advanced at that time, some of them are contained here in the 10 list of reasons. If you look at the minutes, they presented to the minutes, about 10 reasons advanced on why they thought that they will reappoint her. But the chairman is not here now, but they could have, at that time, gone back to review the decision, even the period. And just to say, not to assume that the case will take 5 years, but they could have reviewed that process and said, maybe this is what we should do, because there are issues that are quite serious. Yes, there are allegations until you are proven guilty, but taking into account then the fiduciary duties they have and the image and the integrity of the organization, those considerations could have then come to bear in that process. So I'm raising these things, Kuche, because we can go around circles here. And I think that the council made what they decided as a key decision, because they wanted to appoint her, to extend her, and then deal with the disciplinary process. And the chairperson assured me that if she's found guilty, it will be dismissal and there will be no implications for financial to the NAC. Because that was a question I raised to say, is NAC protected should she be found guilty? You know? So that is what then the chairperson indicated. So there was a lot of attempt to try and say this might be premature to extend the contract or reappoint at this period. But in terms of the law, the council followed their act to the latter. It's not something we can fault them on. But the question was now about the ethical issues, conduct vis-a-vis the image that they could have taken as one of the considerations. But we can't fault them in terms of, because we looked at their act, and the act was clear that they can do that. And that is where the difference is. So my understanding is that on Tuesday when I was here, Chair, I did indicate that I had spoken to the Chair in the morning, and he had said there is a process they were following. And that process, he indicated to me, which I can disclose now, because at that time I couldn't, because it was premature before the CEO gets that letter. But it was about them intending to suspend her or give her what he refers to as a special leave of absence. So at that time, they had prepared everything, but they needed what they called a round-robin decision as a resolution of the council, which I had said it's important because he can't act on his own. It's important that if he can't have a meeting, then they must find a way to get that. Then I got a report that said to me then that the council has done the round robin. They sent me the copies of that a resolution. And I've got here, although it's a majority of members, both others were still to respond, but there is an attachment of who agreed and then others were still to respond. But the majority was responding to the taking the leave of special leave of absence. And it was confirmed to me yesterday that that is what has happened. Because I had asked the question, the CEO is on leave for family bereavement. When is she coming back? When she comes back, what is going to be done? Then I then in the evening yesterday confirmed with the chair that indeed she has received that suspension come called special leave of absence, and the days have been set for the hearing. So I just want to clarify that those are the details I have, and they are all supported by the documented things that I have received here. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, DG. Honorable Makonda.
I can see you're tired. You see, Chair, I have a problem. When you have got a board of a government entity that comes with portfolio committee and not tell the truth, that's a problem. Unless it can be proven that they are behaving like this on the basis of lack of information. But these are honorable people, well educated. I can't believe that. You see, Mr. Mkiwa talks about a leave and a suspension. These are two different, it's not the same, Mr. Mkiwa, and it has got different ways. There's a difference when you are on leave and when you are suspended. It's not the same. When you are on leave, Chair, you are not suspended. You can still, when you are on leave, you can perform your duties. When you are on leave, you can perform your duties. But when you are suspended from performing your duties. And you have got a board that can understand that. The other issue, Chair, it relates to these things of innocent up until proven. I don't know where this will get it from. Because here it's not in a court of law. That only serves in a court of law. At work, you are guilty up until you prove yourself innocent. It's very clear. She's guilty. She must prove herself innocent. But in a court of law, he who alleges must prove. Here, it doesn't have to be that way because she has transgressed. It's clear she did not follow the procedure. Where do you get these things of guilt up until proven? And I'm disappointed because there are people who claim to understand the issues of HR very well. It's so disappointing. And I think, Chair, we must hold this board responsible for whatever that is going to happen. You see, you can still pursue a person when that person is not under your employ. You can, because this is crime what she did. It's crime. You can pursue it. You can go and recoup the money that she authorized illegally. You can attach her asset and then you get this money. But when this person is here, employed, and you discipline her, you dismiss her, she appeals. It's at your cost. She can appeal up until the Constitutional Court will be. Then these people must be held responsible, Chair. They can't just believe like this. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Member. I think what in your meeting, what Minister was telling you is that, as I said earlier, that people need to trust government. government, and it goes to, if we're talking about government, you are a government entity. So the public must trust you. And from this meeting, it is clear that trust has been broken. Because this thing is out there. And I said earlier, we've learned in this journey that it's not about your gut feeling. It's not about your love for someone or your hatred for someone. But it's about how things should be done. It's about the law. It doesn't. You don't have to like people. You don't have to hate people. You just have to act according to what the people have done. And for you to be always on the right side of the law. Because you are a government entity. And as the DG is saying, you've worked within the framework, but this thing that the minister raised in the meeting that you left aside, you just put aside, of you being trusted, it takes a lifetime to build integrity, a lifetime, but it takes a minute to destroy it. The good work that you have done, that Mr. Mkiva was talking about, of you being amongst the best service delivery vehicles of the department, that good work can be destroyed by just this thing that you have done now. It can be destroyed. And I think it's very important for us, when we take decisions, we ensure that the integrity that you have taken so many years to build is not destroyed within a minute. And I am telling you here and now that trust in this organization or institution has been broken. As I said, with integrity, it takes a lot of time to build trust. It takes a lot of time to build trust. It takes a second to destroy it. And it takes a lifetime to rebuild. If people don't trust you anymore, it will take you a lifetime for you to rebuild the trust. So with this, I think it's going to take you a lot of time to rebuild the trust, not only for us, because this is in the public space and people are talking about it, people are calling us about it, that how can this person has transgressed, it's clear, and you are also saying that these are serious transgressions, extension of a contract, serious transgressions, which I mean, you are the ones who are saying this. These transgressions are serious. That's what you are saying. On the other hand, we've extended the contract for the next 5 years. I can't. Can you really? So I think it's important for us when we take decisions. We don't take decisions because of what we feel in the heart, but because of the issues at hand. It's very important. But I want to say again that we appreciate the work that you are doing. It's important for the community and it's important for you to ensure that every step, because serving the community means that they must trust you, means that they must in fact, they are the hopes of the artists. Hopes and dreams of artists are in your hands, as any. They are in your hands. Their hopes, their aspirations are in your hands. So you are a very important institution and a very important arm of the department. And it means at all times you must ensure that the decisions that you take are not going to destroy the integrity that you've taken so many years to build, the trust that those people have in the department and have in you. We are not going to deal with any of the other issues on our agenda because we don't have time. The house starts at 2 o'clock, so we don't have time. But we'd like to thank you very much, the members who have come through to grace this meeting. And you know that you have to prepare, you have to do all those things to ensure that you get the information. And we usually say that as the portfolio committee, we are a mirror. This is what I said to the department last week. We are like a mirror. When you stand in front of a mirror, the mirror doesn't lie to you. And if you take the stone and break it, it's up to you, or you go away and try to rectify whatever the mirror is showing that is not good. So, Chair, Minister, do you want to say?
No, thanks, Chair, and thanks for the meeting, because I think it was Mr. Mkiva who was saying that as people work, they commit mistake. What is important is to understand when the mistake has been committed. I just want, Chair, to make a request that I see here the minutes of the meeting I convened. I'm seeing them here. Some of the things really are not what transpired in the meeting. Just for the record, I don't work in with emotions, Chair. I suppress emotions, but if I may put it, this matter made me to believe it, understanding the context, and I did as such. I was the certification and appreciation should be distinguished clearly, that when I spoke about the expeditious resolution of this matter, I got the commitment. And I said, that commitment makes me satisfied, but it must be kept. That this matter is a big matter. It has to be resolved. Otherwise, as you say, Chair, it's going to tarnish the name of one of the institutions which has been performing. Thank you very much. So I suggest they be withdrawn and be done correctly.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. The meeting is adjourned, ladies and gentlemen, honorable members. Thank you.
I'm going to go to the hospital.